Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hey everybody, it's Dave Plyer in for Steve Cochran on this beautiful Labor Day morning, live from the Allstate Showcase Studios here on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. You can call or text throughout the show, 312-981-7200. Mr. Schwann, good morning to you.
Mr. Plyer.
It was nice to have a weekend off, but nice to be back with you.
Yeah, it was.
It was very nice. Andy, good morning to you.
There you go.
I'm going to get everybody going.
I'm here.
I love that this tradition continues, gentlemen, all summer long and all the holidays that we get to hang out together.
Yeah, this is a tradition. Memorial Day, 4th of July, and now Labor Day. And I think it's been going on at least 2 years now.
Yeah,
I think.
If not almost three.
Yeah, I think it's almost three. Yeah,
I'm just here for the food. You guys know that.
And Jim Ryan crashing our party. Good morning to you, my friend.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Welcome.
What's going on?
Our newest fraternity brother.
And a guy that I don't get to work with very often, but Bennett Wakenight, who's here every single day doing the morning bell and hanging out for Steve Cochran's show. Good morning, Bennett. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. I was actually just in bed. You know, I have a bed now upstairs,
yeah,
so I was just woken up, and they just said, hey, can
here.
You just, I said, you know what, whatever, let's do it.
It is true that people do sleep here, Bennett. They do.
Last week.
Did you?
A week from today,
That's right. That's been the case for years.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a rite of passage.
It's a rite of passage. Now, where did you go, though? Because, see, okay, I know we got sofas up on the 7th floor. Patty's got one in her office. Where do you own? And then this one in the green room. I can't lay on that thing.
I was up in the 7th floor. You know,
okay.
It's a little quieter up there.
In
not as many
four?
People. No, on the 7th floor.
Oh, on the 7th floor.
And
okay.
Club
right.
720.
Okay. Well, you're going to have plenty of places to sleep in this building in about 6 months.
Very true. We'll have our picking.
You can bring a blow up or do whatever you have to do. And by that, I mean a mattress. But yeah. This weekend, and I always do this, and Dave, we talk about this all the time. My wife tells me I always try to stuff about 50 pounds into a 5-pound bag when we do vacations and so forth. And I've been off since Thursday. And, you know, I've got a kid that's a sophomore in high school now, so his plans don't always line up with my plans any longer. So we went up. I took off the day on Friday. I actually ended up being down here doing some show prep, and I ended up hanging out with Bill and Wendy on the air for a little bit. And then my son said, well, you know, I've got a soccer tournament that I've got to do, and I want to be at the first football game. Now, I've already planned to be up in Wisconsin with the family Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and that wasn't his plan exactly. But, you know, it's hard because I know I've got to start adapting a little bit and letting him do his thing. He's a sophomore. He wants to be with his buddies and do whatever.
I can't believe he's a sophomore already.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
But and he's so respectful about it. It's like, Dad, I really want to be there. How do we do this? So once in a while, I have a dad-daughter date with my 10-year-old daughter, and we always go out to dinner. She picks the place, and she knows her way around downtown. She'll be like, let's go to Greektown. Let's go to the Purple Pig. Let's go to, like, you know, she's sophisticated.
She like coming over here?
Taste. She does. Yeah. She does. Yeah, absolutely. So we haven't done that in a while because all summer long we're doing so much family stuff. There isn't enough time to break away with one of them to do something separately. It's true. We spend a lot of time together. So I said, well, my wife said, let me stay home with our youngest, Alex, and let's who's four. And I'll let Josh do his soccer game and his football game, and we'll drive up first thing in the morning. Why don't you go have a daddy-daughter date? So that's exactly what we did. So, like, it's 6:30, no, about 6 o'clock, which was pretty brutal, the traffic getting out of here. But we drove up north and dropped off our stuff and then started hitting, you know, our favorite little spot. So we went to a supper club up there. And now, in the middle of nowhere, it's in Delavan, but it's like in farmland Delavan. It's this duck inn that we go to all the time. And
you love that place.
I do love that place. It's just kind of summer to me being there. And it reminds me of going out to dinner with my grandparents. And there's a relish tray and good old fashions and Friday night fish fry that's so important up in Wisconsin when you go up there. So we went up there. And immediately, as soon as we walked in the door, ran into some cousins that live in Chicago that were randomly up there, staying up there. So Em and I had a great dinner, great talk about her first couple weeks of school, and then And then we drove back, and it was a place called the Mars Resort, and it's up in on Lake Como in Lake Geneva. So I don't like – I love downtown Lake Geneva, but on the weekends, I'm sure you guys have been up there, it's a little crazy. It's very touristy. It's a little hard to get through and deal with, and I can't handle that anymore as I get older with all the crowds. So we went to this little resort, and it's a piano bar. And so Emma and I walked in there at like 11 o'clock at night, and she's raring to go, like 11 o'clock at night, just ready to hit the town. And I knew my buddy Wayne Mesmer was going to be up there because he sings at this piano bar. And he does it for fun. I mean, he's not a paid. He just walks in, grabs a cocktail, and him and Kathy sit down and start belting the show tunes and some other things. And it was so fun to see him and saw some other friends. And I notice this all the time, too, that, you know, I think this is my place. Like, when I go up there, and I saw on Facebook a couple weeks ago, that Judy Pilak's up there hanging out at the piano bar and stuff. Like, there's a lot of familiar folks up there. So we did that, and then the family came up on Saturday, and we did some boating and some tubing, and that's really all we did. It was great. I mean, just chilled on the lake.
Do you fish, Dave?
We do. We didn't this time. Not catfishing like Kevin and Michael were talking about earlier, which was hysterical. But yeah, we fish a little bit. And you know what? This Lake Como is a very dense lake. It's very muddy. And so, you know, when Josh last did that, which I think was the beginning of August, like a, I don't know, like a 20-inch northern pike that he caught. I mean, there's
Seeing the pictures.
Yeah,
of that.
There's some pretty big fish in there. But no, we really just chilled. And then Sunday morning got up and hightailed it back and went to the Cubs game yesterday. So it's been a busy. Yeah, it's been a busy.
It was a good game. I saw the end of that game.
It
yesterday.
Was a great game. Yeah.
So you stayed all 13.
I did, and I will not. You know, good and it's funny you. On Facebook. A lot of people were asking me, "Are you still there?"
Mm-hmm.
I, when it comes to any games, no matter what it is—Bears, Hawks, whatever, Cubs, any concerts—I stay to the end.
You never know what you're going to miss.
And what drives me crazy is the score was 2-2.
2-2.
And after the seventh inning, eighth inning, people are walking out.
Like, yeah, that makes no sense.
Come on. You really have to beat traffic on a Sunday of Labor Day weekend. You got to get out of there in the craziness.
It wasn't a great deal of traffic out late yesterday afternoon either.
Well, after the game, you know, it does take about 40 minutes or whatever to get out of there. But then, you know, listen to whatever's on the radio. Listen to the beat. Mm-hmm. Listen to, you know, whatever as you're leaving. Brian, we were listening to Brian Noonan on the way out. So, you know, you got to do that stuff. But no, I stayed at the end.
Good for you.
You have to do that. I do make my way down. Once I see empty seats and stuff, we sit in different spots. Not so much closer, but we get some different vantage points. So every half inning or so, we start moving around.
Is that a superstition or just the fact that they're open?
The fact that they're open, and it's a different experience for the kids to see the game at a different angle. I think that's pretty cool. And I was there Wednesday, too. We took my pastor and former pastor down there, and Michael Heidemann's brother works there, and he jumped up from his security there, and he was kind enough to bring each guy one of the game balls and stuff like that. So pretty cool. But today, doing nothing. How about you guys?
I'm here for the morning, and I've got some things to do that I've been putting off.
So you're laboring on Labor Day.
So, oh, yeah, right.
Laboring on Labor Day.
That's usually what I end up doing.
Andy?
Yeah.
I actually have a fantasy football draft today.
Is that right?
Yes.
All right.
I know nobody likes to hear about other teams' family of fantasy football teams, but I have a draft today.
So you get to work on that. That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. Jim, what about you, buddy?
Laboring, barbecuing may work an adult beverage in the mix. We'll see.
Okay. All right. Okay. Barbecue, we got Weber Grill coming up at 8:30, so he's going to give us some tips, and he's giving away a grill as well, so stay tuned for that. Bennett, you know, you're a hardworking guy, but you work like 7 days a week, so what are you going to do for yourself today? You going to chill? You going to relax? Hang out with the girlfriend?
You know,
go to sleep,
haven't decided yet.
I like that. That seems cool.
Just keeping things open.
Keeping it open.
Be it spontaneous, man. Yeah.
Why not? All right. We've got a big show for you today. So at about 5:37, we're going to talk a little bit about the legacy of Jerry Lewis. No, he's not dead. He's alive. He's 90 years old. And there was a great profile on CBS Sunday Morning that aired, and he was all over social media just kind of talking about life and his career and his relationship with Dean Martin. So we're going to play a little bit of that. And it's 40 years ago today that Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis reunited on stage at the MDA Telethon. 40 years ago when Frank Sinatra brought him out on stage after not talking to each other or seeing each other in 20 years. So kind of legendary. So we'll talk a little bit about that. After at 6:07, we're going to talk to David Schwartz. He's the chief curator for the Museum of the Moving Image in New York about an acclaimed online exhibit featuring more than 500 commercials from every presidential race since the first TV campaign in 1952 when it was Eisenhower and who do you think, Dave? Eisenhower and
you said 52. Run this by me again.
1952 election. Yep.
It was Eisenhower and Adlai Stevenson.
That's correct. And yeah. It was again in 56. I think they ran against each other again, right? So from that,
and the vice presidential candidate on the Democratic side was Estes Kefauver.
Wow! Wow!
See what a nerd.
Yeah,
I am
that's
about
phenomenal.
This.
No, you're a history buff at heart. I love that. Well, you know, and we're going to talk about all those commercials up to the Clinton and Trump campaign because, you know, their broadcast strategies or messages have helped shape the election just by what they've done on television. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk a little bit to this curator about that. I thought that'd be fascinating. 6:37, Bob Newhart's 87. I talked to all the old guys in the business. We're going to talk to Jerry Lewis. He's 90. I think
Lewis
we have a clip with Don Rickles.
It's been 40 years since
40 years.
That he and Dean Martin were reunited.
Yeah.
Just isn't that
crazy?
Seem that long.
No, I know. 40 years makes you feel old. But we'll talk a little bit about Bob Newhart, 87 years old, and we're going to talk to him about when he first started here in Chicago in the early 60s and put out his album. He was talking to Eddie Hubbard and Wally Phillips over the years. And he's going to talk to us. We talked to him earlier or later in the previous week here, but talk about how much WGN meant to him in his early career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was an accountant here in Chicago. That's what he was. He went to Loyola to become an accountant. So,
and he just started.
He was
kind
a funny
doing
accountant.
Stand up on the side.
He would joke around at work, and they said, "You know, you should really give this a shot." And that's what
that's
he did.
That's how it happened.
He was at the Cubs Dodgers games out in L.A. a couple.
Wasn't that great? Yeah. I saw Dean post one of those pictures.
That whole booth was filled with Chicago celebrities.
Joe Mantegna,
Bonnie Hunt,
Jeremy Piven. Oh, I didn't see Bonnie in there.
Yeah, she was there.
Jeff Garland,
right?
Was Dreesen in there?
I think Dreesen was in there too.
Okay. Yeah, in September, we've got a broadcast museum event with Tom Dreesen that Dean Richards is hosting, and that's going to be at the end of the month. It's an evening with him. I think I'll find the exact date, but you can look at museum.tv, and you get to listen to Tom talk about his life in comedy, touring with Sinatra, all that good stuff, as well as speaking of Tom Dreesen. After the news at 7, tomorrow's the first day of Chicago Public Schools, and as I said earlier, it's amazing how many kids don't show up that first day. Now, most other suburban schools and Catholic schools and private schools have been back to school 2 or 3 weeks already. But for some reason, getting kids back in the classroom in Chicago Public Schools is a struggle sometimes. So we're going to talk to Chief Education Officer Janice Jackson, and she's going to talk to us a little bit about that and the expansion of their safe passage, you know, with the gun violence that we've had in Chicago. I think I heard you talking about it yesterday on Dean's show.
Yes.
That they're expanding that, and there's going to be...
Right, Roger Badish had a story on that
as
well.
And how many people...
In fact, we've got a story coming up on it here within the hour.
70,000 people involved in this program that are going to be lining the streets or seven... Mm-hmm. It's absolutely incredible, so we'll talk about that. Then at 7:37, Chicago actor and improv comedian Jeff Rogers. He's the host and co-executive producer of Jeff's Homemade Game Show. He's got a pilot out there. It's a ton of fun. I've seen this thing already. And he's looking for interested families to participate. So he's going to be here in studio. Let's see here. 7:50, the folks from Cubs Authentic. So we've always got a little Chicago Cubs thing happening still here on WGN. They're going to be here. And, you know, this is where in the middle of the game they're bringing bases off the field that you can buy for Cubs charities. It all benefits Cubs charities.
Yeah, they have these guys all throughout Major League Baseball to authenticate things, you know, not only just for fans, but also for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Things of that nature to take a bat out of play. If it's Ichiro, for example, when he had his 3,000th hit, they authenticated that ball so that it goes to the Hall of Fame and it's the actual baseball that was hit.
If you're catching a ball at Wrigley, I think they do that too.
They
can't
do
you
it.
Bring it over there?
Yeah, and especially if it's a milestone home run.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay.
They'll definitely authenticate that so that they can, you know, ID the right ball. And in the playoffs, pretty much every ball is scanned. So they have an idea of where everything
is. Yeah, that's right. So if you get a ball just thrown to you by one of the guys, can you go have it authenticated?
You probably can, but I think that's
a stretch, isn't it?
Yeah,
unless it's on TV catching it and so forth. And he's going to give something away from yesterday's game, the Giants game, which we won 3-2. So we're going to see what that is And that's at 7:50 or so. Then after 8, LaRoyce Hawkins, one of the stars of NBC's Chicago PD, and I've had him on many times, really, really good guy. He's from Harvey, Illinois, so he's one of Chicago's very own. He's on Chicago PD. They're back in studio. And he's involved in this organization, brand-new organization that has a fundraiser coming up, but it's called Patrick Lives On to End Gun Violence in Chicago and across America, and I thought that'd be great to have him in studio and talk a little bit about that and the tragedy that this young man went through a year ago. And then we're going to talk to Kevin Coleman from Weber Grill, because there's no holiday in the summer without talking to Kev. And he's bringing, I think he's bringing some goodies, and we're giving away a Chicago Cubs Weber Q Grill.
Nice.
Guys, if we are all here on Thanksgiving morning, we're having Kevin in as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, it's we tradition. Need to do that.
And
you know,
have him talk about doing turkey on the grill.
We got a campaign to do Thanksgiving morning, because then I get out, and I'm down in like Monticello, Illinois for the day for Thanksgiving, but I could do the morning show, so we got to
sure.
figure out doing that.
I'm
yeah,
in.
We should do some. Yeah, you know what? He's done this before, where we've tailgated in the parking lot here before one of the shows, so he could throw a couple turkeys in.
Oh, that'd be nice.
That'd be great.
He can get here at 3. That's fine. We have to be here at 3 o'clock in the morning to do this. That'll be fine. Why not?
Your Thanksgiving turkey on a Weber grill. I'm
yeah.
telling you, that sounds terrific.
We do, and I want to start talking about Thanksgiving. It's only Labor Day, but because my wife was coming home from Wisconsin, she's like, "Should I get some pumpkins, some hay?" I'm like, "No, I'm not ready
yet,
for that.
Not yet.
I'm going to hang on to summer as long as possible." Because I thought, what, fall is September 21st. I'm not
right.
giving this up yet.
Yeah. No. And I'm off on Thursday of this week. That's going to be my holiday.
That's
and
your holiday. Okay.
Thursday of this week is my holiday.
Okay, that's what you're taking off.
Michigan, right. corn, yeah. fruit. I will come back with pumpkin.
Okay. Oh, that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, let's get this party started here on 720 WGN. All right, it's Dave Flyer and for Steve Grzanich and Steve Cochran on this Labor Day morning on 720 WGN. Do you know what that is? Do you remember what that is, Andy?
I'm going to guess.
Okay, go ahead.
That's the Martin and Lewis theme.
That is Jerry Lewis and his famous little typewriter
yeah.
routine.
Okay, that's yeah, good. Yeah. Okay, so I knew it was something with Jerry Lewis because, I paid attention in the open.
I appreciate
in case
that.
There was a quiz.
Thank you for doing that. Well, the legendary Jerry Lewis, who turned 90 this year, showed up on CBS's Sunday Morning yesterday with a look back at his career and his legacy with the MDA, those telethons that we watched for decades on Labor Day weekend that he was the helm of. And I'll tell you, he was they were the hottest things in show business in the 1940s. And it seems so long ago, but he was like... Crowds, thousands of people, like the Beatles would show up to watch them perform. It's amazing. Like, they would go check into a hotel and open up the hotel window and walk out the balcony, and there'd be tens of thousands of fans just sitting outside waiting to say hello to them. And they only lasted about 10 years as a comedy team, maybe plus. And, anytime anybody refers to, what are we, Martin and Lewis? Meaning we broke up, we didn't talk to each other anymore for years. That's what they refer to. Here's a little bit of that interview from CBS Sunday Morning on Jerry's relationship with Dean.
Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin first teamed up in 1946, post-war New York.
I fell in love with him the day we met.
You want to come up for coffee?
And within weeks, they were selling out shows with their own brand of sex appeal and slapstick.
Why are you waiting?
I forgot what song we were singing.
For you and Dean, it almost seemed like anarchy. Is that the right way to describe it?
Yeah, pretty good. That's as good an explanation as I've ever heard. I loved him so much, and I knew how much he loved me. Jesus Christ, I'm telling you stuff I haven't talked about in 50 years.
Thank you.
We were both 6 feet tall. I took his shoes one day and put lifts on him so that he would be a little taller than me.
Because you thought that was better for the bit if you looked younger.
You can't do that unless you're feeling it.
But after a nonstop decade together, they weren't feeling it anymore. The two parted ways in 1956 and wouldn't even speak to each other for nearly 20 years. Lewis, who learned his craft on the fly by watching people on movie sets.
That is a simple way to remember.
Wound up teaching a film class to grad students at the University of Southern California.
Any questions?
Who was in your class?
I had Steven Spielberg, about 12 guys from a class of 60 made it in the big, in the bigs, we called it.
The really bigs.
The bigs, yeah.
I'm going to work, dude.
All right, places, please.
And in 1960, he made another lesser-known contribution to filmmaking, video assist, that is, instant video replay of a movie scene after a take. Today, it's something directors can't live without.
Do you still think about Dean now?
Oh, sure. There isn't a day I don't think about him. And the fact that he left and died, I can't believe how bad I was that he died on me. I knew he would do it.
So I have to ask you this question. You working?
Yes. Yes. Christ, all the time.
Do you know what a wrench is, sir? A wrench? That's where Jewish cowboys live. A wrench.
The twice married father of seven is still performing live with no plans to quit.
Is there a goal you have now?
I want to live a little.
You want to live
longer.
A little? Live a little longer?
Yeah.
What's a little longer?
Well, I'm 90. I figure maybe 4 or 5 would be nice.
In the twilight of an unforgettable life, all Jerry Lewis really wants is a little bit more.
And what's amazing, Dean Martin's been gone for 20 years already almost. So, I mean, this goes on. This legend is 90 years old. Now, the probably one of the most memorable moments on these telethons, and these were huge. I'm sure you remember that, too. The entertainers, maybe the last 10 years, they were a little, the entertainment was a little weaker, but you had the Sinatras, the mm-hmm. Sammy Davis Jr.'s, the, you know, Ed McMahon was there every single time. They had the hottest musical acts on stage. You would be glued to the set all weekend.
Yeah, I remember my brother and I used to watch it all the time, and it was always that weird feeling of, hey, it's really cool, it's the Jerry Lewis telethon, and oh man, we got to go to school tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
it was bittersweet, right. But it was great. We would try to stay up as late as we could.
Yeah, and I know Dean was involved in that for decades mm-hmm. too. He was our local local host here. Well, anyway, probably one of the most memorable moments was when Frank Sinatra walked on stage and surprised Jerry Lewis after more than 20 years of not speaking to Dean Martin, not seeing them, brought them both together. Let's take a little listen.
There they are, folks. I don't know.
So how you been?
You know, it seems like we haven't seen each other for 20 years.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was all those rumors about our breaking up, and then when I started the show and you weren't here, I believed it.
I'll show you guys to your room if you like. The lights are out upstairs, so follow me if you
want. He drinks a lot, this kid.
So you working?
I work 6 weeks a year at the Megum.
The Megum?
And 6 days I do a roast. And
would you excuse us a minute?
I just want to see the wires are all right.
Gee, it's nice to see you. I'm over here.
No, I had to come in because I had to, you know, I had to go, and this was the closest place.
You always have to go.
I always drink.
Classic. That was like memorable to see. Do you remember that moment, seeing that?
Oh, sure.
It's crazy. And I was like 9 years old when that aired, and I remember seeing them hit the stage and going, "Holy cow! This is important."
Right.
You know?
Oh yeah, yeah.
So
and of course, you know, for years the rumor, if you will, or the word was that they parted ways and they were bitter and they didn't want to talk, but both of them, you know, kind of insisted that that really wasn't the case. They parted ways, and that was it.
I don't think they spoke, but they weren't really angry at each other.
Angry.
They both knew it was time for them to have their separate careers.
Ways,
absolutely. Now, the two spoke regularly 20 years after that legendary reunion. So they talked regularly until Martin's death in 95. Lewis, who is now age 90, is no longer obviously involved in the Muscular Dystrophy Association. I saw some articles this weekend that it's a mixed bag. Whether not pulling the telethon off the air, because it's been off the air for a few years already, mm-hmm. has made a significant impact on finances. It's debatable whether they've needed that or not. You know, because a lot of this money was collected and is collected in advance, and then the checks are presented at the telethon. But I think that was part of the charm of this whole thing, is you got to be on television, whether right. locally yeah. or with Jerry Lewis
and everybody
on stage.
Waiting for the big turn of the numbers.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Now, he did do a video for the organization this February, helping promote its new logo and tagline. So they did engage him again because there's new management there. But he has said, I couldn't do another telethon. No, no more. I can't give it any more than I already gave it. And what an amazing life he has had. Real quick, one more clip. I'm going to throw this in here. This is a few years before the end of the telethon. And I remember this. Jerry Lewis, you know, was ill for a while, and he was very heavy and bloated and very uncomfortable. So he decided to invite Don Rickles to come harass him on stage. Let's take a listen.
You know, the kids need help, but stop. Don't beg. Don't beg. You were a big star once. You got to remember who the hell you are. You don't have to sit there and beg for the kids in the wheelchairs. Let them live, be well. God will be good to them. But you don't have to stand here and have a fireman sit here for 8 hours, and then you sit with the $3 million, and they're walking around going, I'm busting my brain for the lousy $3 million. These guys, they give you the money gladly. How long have you had that? Anyway, you don't got enough. You don't have enough trouble. Now you got to twitch. Man's sitting there like a Jew whale, and he's twitching. There's the old buddy, Ed McMahon. Every night he gets up in the morning and punches Johnny Carson's picture.
That's nice.
How you doing, big guy?
Good, Don. You're looking good.
I looked
good.
At your trailer. The booze is running down the stairs. We used to drink together. You didn't do that. You were busy chasing broads. Anyway, you folks don't know this guy. When he was with Dean, rest his soul, this man was in heat 24 hours a day. That's why he got the bad back and everything. Sliding off those broads all the time. Boom. Just smiling at that. You were so big once. It's a funny business how you wind up an announcer for the heavy Jew sitting over here. For kind of... Well, I know you've been sick and all, but it's a good gimmick.
Oh, man.
Hey.
Saying that his weight was a good gimmick. That's nice. That's a legendary. Also 90 years old, the legendary Don Rickles.
Right.
Yeah, both of them 90 years old. What an amazing life Jerry Lewis has had and continues to have. So great that we got to hear his voice a little bit this morning. Dave Player in for Steve Grzanich and Steve Cochran here on 720 WGN. It's all kinds of stuff going around. It's today's the unofficial. They say it's the unofficial end of summer. I'm not buying that. I don't want to even think about it.
We've got summer for another 2.5-3 weeks.
Yeah, September 21st. So there's so much to do in and around Chicagoland. I thought I'd throw some of these out there. The African Festival of the Arts is taking place right now. It's crafts, drumming, food, entertainment. At a festival Labor Day weekend in Washington Park, the Polish Festival. Have you been there to taste the Polonia?
No, Dean and I were talking about it yesterday, and it's a great. He said it's a terrific festival.
It is. Yeah. It is. You're not going to eat healthy going into that by any means, but great potato pancakes, pierogies, ooh, the sausage, sure. All that good stuff.
Right. Right.
And that's going on at the Copernicus Center. So you're just right off of Milwaukee and Lawrence over there. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And today's the last day for that. There's a Naperville, I think it's called the Naperville Last Fling of summer. So it's a family event with a parade, carnival rides.
That's going on all weekend out there as well.
Yep. Renaissance Fair, of course, is happening. Ooh, there's a big yoga festival going on right now. Dave, I'd like to see you do some yoga. It'll be good for us. Come on, let's go.
I like to do yoga.
Do you?
Yes.
All right. Okay. My wife does hot yoga.
Hot yoga?
Yeah. Which is like
Bikram? Is that what it's called?
Yeah. It's like 100 degrees in there, or over 100 degrees in that room, and she's just a ball of sweat.
Oh, okay,
but
so it's like being in a sauna.
Yeah, pretty much.
Doing yoga.
Yeah, pretty much. And that is yoga classes, music. Where's that? In Pawpaw. All right, so that's a little bit of a drive.
Pawpaw, Michigan?
Yeah.
That's about 3 hours from here. Yeah.
And there's some also movies in the park. You just got to go to the Chicago Park District to find out some of that stuff as well. The Fringe Theater Festival in Jefferson Park has been going on as well. The Ravinia, of course, is always a blast. Now, if you're going to be spending time, you know, we always talk about the couch potato stuff to do. There's a Friends marathon today, all day on TBS from 10 to 5, that were hand-chosen, I guess, on Facebook. You can't get enough Friends.
No.
You know, of course not. Comedy Central. Oh, you're going to be excited about this, Andy. It's a lengthy. It's a South Park marathon starting. it started yesterday. So there you have it.
I caught a couple episodes yesterday.
Now here's what I'm excited about that I keep forgetting is on Labor Day is the Comedy Central roast, which I just love. Jeffrey Ross and hearing all these guys do this stuff. So tonight is Rob Lowe, and that's 9 o'clock tonight. Is the Comedy Central roast, so you got to catch that. History Channel, let's see here, Pawn Stars all day long, very exciting. BBC America. Now, this week is also the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, believe it or not.
Right. And MeTV's is going to be showing interesting pilot episodes and
in
things
Svengoolie,
that were not
aired. On Svengoolie this coming week. Yeah, they're going to do that. So 50 years of Star Trek, if you can believe it. And there's a new Star Trek series, I think it's called Discovery, that's premiered on CBS. Are you a Star Trek guy, Bennett? Does that matter to you, Star Trek, at all? No, not at all. Anybody?
Yeah. To
the classic ones, yeah. You know. I know. There's deep fans that watch Next Generation and everything else, but that's going to be a big deal. Sci-fi, it's a Shark Movie Weekend. Very exciting about that. And then Z Nation marathon is going to happen as well. Two new specials air tonight on CNN on Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Probably, right. Have you read some of this stuff lately about on CNN how they're like. There was a guest that they had on that had a Trump shirt on, and they actually clouded out and faded out the shirt so you couldn't see.
I didn't
for
see
Trump.
That,
so there's a lot of that happening where there's more on CNN than any other network about the bias for Hillary Clinton. I mean, I think if you're going to be a news channel, you gotta share it both ways. And I know they say that about Fox too, but you gotta do both, tell both stories. Let's see here. Harley and the Davidsons, a new special miniseries which tells the history of the legendary motorcycle company and the people behind it. I think that's going to be pretty cool. There's a lot of Harley fans out there, obviously. First episode airs tonight at 8 on the Discovery Channel. Let's see here. What else? An American Heroes channel begins Labor Day. America Facts versus Fiction. So you might like that. It's all history, man. All history there for you. Yep. And this Labor Day, as I said, we'll be laboring a little bit this morning as soon as my son gets home from a buddy's house.
What we do, David, is a labor of love.
That's right. That's true. That's true. Yeah, doing this, that just means an early bedtime tonight. That's all that means for getting up at 3 o'clock this morning. But the kids know for a few hours before we have some people over for a barbecue that there's going to be some work to do. Well, no, it's like back to school. They're involved in things. They got homework to do and stuff. And I've just got a short list. So if they're listening, which they are not, they're going to have a few things to do later today.
5:57 on a non-school
exactly,
day?
Exactly.
Yeah, no, they're not listening.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's see what else we got going on here. This week, Museums and Science and Industry, it's free days this week. Weekdays starting tomorrow, you can visit the Museum of Science and Industry. Just show your Illinois ID, and you can get in for free. That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Weekdays, but kids are back in school at this point.
Well, they will be.
This is more for
they can go today.
More for adults. It's closed today.
Oh, it's closed today.
Yeah, can't go today. September 8th coming out. It's Adult Zoo Night. So leave the kids at home and head to the Adults Night Out at Lincoln Park Zoo. Yeah. I'm sure there's cocktails, but it also says experience unique animal chats. Now, is that among each other? You think that's what that is? Live entertainment, so there's live bands. You got to be 18 or older to attend, but cash bars are available for 21 and up. So just bring your Illinois ID, I guess, or your fake ID, and I guess you can get through that. Let's see what else we got going on. Yeah, those are some pretty cool things. I'm looking forward, and now I'm seeing advertisements for Oktoberfest already.
Oh, sure.
All over town. I know. That happens in a couple weeks.
Yeah. Middle of September.
Yep.
Berghoff does Berghoff it every year. Will have it in the Federal Plaza there. I remember when they used to close off Adams between State and Dearborn for almost 5 days.
But right in front of the restaurant.
Right in front of the restaurant.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore. No, it's kind of off in the plaza now. It's a little smaller, but it's great to go there for lunch.
Oh, yeah. Lunch and dinner. Yeah. And they've got bands.
Yeah.
Traditional German bands in the afternoon, and then rock stuff in the evening.
Yeah.
Over there.
We'll post some of that stuff on WGNradio.com for your fun things to do on this Labor Day.
Ike for president, Ike for president, Ike for president, Ike for president. You like Ike, I like Ike. Everybody likes Ike for president. Hang out the banner, beat the drum. We'll take Ike to Washington.
We don't want John
or Dean
or Harry.
Let's do that big job right. Just get in step with the guy that's hep. Get in step with Ike. You like Ike.
Day player in for Steve Cochran on this beautiful Labor Day morning here on 720 WGN. So in a media-saturated environment in which news, opinions, and entertainment surround us all day, on our television sets, our computers, our smartphones, the television commercial remains the one area where presidential candidates have complete control over their images. Television commercials use all the tools of fiction filmmaking, including script, visuals, editing, and performance, to distill a candidate's major campaign themes into just a few powerful images. The LivingRoomCandidate.org contains more than 300 commercials from every presidential election since 1952. And joining us to talk about the history of presidential advertising and how it affects our presidential elections in America is David Schwartz. He's a chief curator for the Museum of the Moving Image in New York. Good morning, David.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Thank you for joining us this morning. It's a fascinating website and review of what we've seen over the past six decades. Going through and pulling all 300 of these spots together must have been quite a daunting task for you.
It was fun. It's a little bit addictive, I think, to once you start watching these commercials. They're a lot of fun, and they're important little time capsules of what was going on at each of the years, each of the election years.
Now, it has changed, obviously, so much, even when the invention of radio came. But, you know, I remember Harry Truman reading this about Harry Truman. He was so proud of accomplishing the shaking 500,000 hands, covering 31,000 miles. And that really was impactful at the time in 1948. But 1952, the presidential election saw a major change in how candidates reached their audiences with the advent of television. And in this Eisenhower campaign, were 40 20-second television spots entitled Eisenhower Answers America, where he was talking to the citizens of America.
Yeah, well, by 1952, you had about 20 million households in the country with television sets. You know, back in 1948, there were just a few hundred thousand. So that was a big change. Television had really taken off. And there was a Madison Avenue ad executive named Royce Reeves who was most famous for doing M&M commercials, melts in your mouth, not in your hands. Mm-hmm. And he convinced the Eisenhower campaign to spend money buying short TV commercial time, and they reached a lot of people that way. So, you know, now we hear about all the money being raised for campaigns, hundreds of millions of dollars and billions of dollars, and most of that money is going to TV advertising.
Absolutely.
You know, although, of course, as we know, this year is a little different.
Yeah, just a little bit. And we'll definitely talk about that. But, you know, this first election, you know, I was looking at, you know, 1952, President Truman entered. His popularity was plummeting. The Korean War was dragging into its third year. Senator Joseph McCarthy's anti-communist crusade was stirring public fears. There was a lot going on at that time. And, so, you know, what had to happen between Eisenhower and Stevenson is that they really had to define themselves in this election, and the way to do it at that time was the growing popularity of television.
Well, I came up with he had a very simple message. You know, one of the things about these commercials is that they're short. So he basically focused on the war in Korea, the high cost of living, and corruption that was going on in Washington. And those were the themes. The other theme was and this is a theme that runs throughout many of the campaigns, was this idea of the outsider, the person who's going to come into Washington and clean it up. Mm-hmm. And whether it's a Republican candidate like Eisenhower or Reagan presented himself that way.
Yeah.
And then there were the Democratic equivalents of the outsiders, like Jimmy Carter, you know, even Bill Clinton, Barack Obama. Use the same kind of message.
That's what Donald Trump is saying, too. So, I mean, we're still seeing that today.
Exactly. Yeah. So you always have that. You always have this idea that Washington doesn't work. You need somebody to come fix it. So, you know, the commercials do change. Like, that was a jingle from the 50s you were playing at the beginning. That the style of the ads changes, but very often you find the same messages over and over again in every election year.
Good morning, David. Dave Schwann here from WGN Radio News. You mentioned the fact that these commercials have a certain theme to them, and I remember when George H.W. Bush ran against mm-hmm. Reagan in 1980, his campaign slogan was, he is a president, we won't have to train, which was kind of taking a shot at President Carter, who was kind of an unknown and came in 1976. But, you know, it's like the more things change, the more they stay the same. These themes, if you think about
so
it,
true.
There's a parallel between, the commercials from even 50 years ago and more and what we're seeing today.
Well, right. I just, one thing interesting about this year is that Donald Trump has been releasing very few commercials. He's relying on new forms of media, like social media, and of course, using free time on television news. But he just released a commercial which has a very old Republican message. There's a lot of Republican ads throughout history that say that the Democrats are going to raise your taxes. That's a common message, and that was the theme of the latest Donald Trump ad, and it was very similar. There was a Reagan versus Mondale ad where Reagan said Mondale-nomics was raise taxes, and Reagan's going to cut your taxes and create new jobs, and that's exactly the same message of the Donald Trump ad that just went on the airways. And Hillary Clinton's ads, she's using a message basically saying, it's a risk to elect the other guy, that we should be afraid of him. And that is a theme that goes back to the Daisy Girl commercial from 1964, which basically said that if you vote for Barry Goldwater, the world could come to an end.
Wasn't that ad pulled after a couple of airings?
It actually only aired once. It was a great commercial that's on our website, of course, and it's as a little girl is picking petals off a daisy,
and then you cut
from that to nuclear explosion.
Yeah.
And that was an effective use of children. That's another thing that we noticed. And a lot of the most effective commercials use children because they strike an emotional chord. And so there was an effective Hillary Clinton commercial earlier in this campaign with children watching clips of Donald Trump's speeches on television.
This is a man whose time has come, a strong leader with a proven record. In 1966, answering the call of his party, Ronald Reagan was elected governor of California, next to president, the biggest job in the nation. What the new governor inherited was a state of crisis. California was faced with a $194 million deficit and was spending $1 million a day more than it was taking in. The state was on the brink of bankruptcy. Governor Reagan became the greatest tax reformer in the state's history. When Governor Reagan left office, the $194 million deficit had been transformed into a $550 million surplus. The San Francisco Chronicle said, Governor Reagan has saved the state from bankruptcy. The time is now for strong leadership. Reagan for president.
Dave Plyer in for Steve Cochran on 720 WGN. We are talking to David Schwartz. He's a chief curator for the Museum of the Moving Image and a online exhibit that is just fascinating called The Living Room Candidate. And you can find that at thelivingroomcandidate.org. We're talking a little bit off air about 1976 and 1980. Obviously, 1976, after Nixon, after Ford, people wanted to change with Carter, but then in 1980, that change theme continued, obviously, because in 1980, they couldn't get rid of Carter fast enough.
Well, I think, the key objective for the Reagan campaign that year was to show that he was presidential. You know, we hear that word a lot these days, but he was an actor. You know, he was, in addition to being a governor, he had made his name as a movie actor. So they had to convey the idea that he should be taken seriously and that he could be a president. So of course he was governor of California. So that's what that ad focused on. And, his commercials in that year were for the most part positive, except there was a great attack ad, featuring his wife, Nancy Reagan, which is my favorite commercial from that year, where she tears into Jimmy Carter over what she calls vacillating and weak foreign policy. So Reagan himself was not the attack dog in that year.
He put his wife out there.
Yes, and it was an effective way to do it.
You know, and I found it fascinating, too, that they said, well, the biggest job in America next to being the president is the governor of California. So it is all of the ways that these messages are communicated and maybe twisted around a little bit when they're trying to talk to the American people to make it sound a little, probably a little bit better than it actually is, you know?
Well, sure. That's what you can do with a commercial. You can basically, you know, control your message and say what you want. But usually these commercials do distill a campaign. I mean, that's what I think is so great about them. You can watch a 30-second commercial and get a sense of what the campaign is about. You know, we know that for Donald Trump, for example, this is to jump back to this year. The immigration theme is really important, and that message that you know, that the situation is dangerous and the borders are out of control. And that was his first commercial. He's actually only run two commercials in the general election.
Which is amazing. I know.
And the first one focused on immigration, which was what he talked about in his very first, you know, his announcement of his campaign. So you get a good sense. And so we're updating we're following the race this year. So the website, the Living Room Candidate, has commercials from every election from 1952 up through the present. And we're adding commercials as they come out this year. We're also doing a blog where we're looking not just at commercials, but other forms of media, you know, web videos and social media. You know, it's a new environment.
The 1992 campaign, I wanted to mention this, it was Clinton, Bush, and Perot. How did a third-party candidate really affect how the election on television ran?
Well, I mean, it just created an interesting dynamic especially during the debate. I mean, that's, you know, a lot of people watching the debates felt that Ross Perot was the winner of the first debate. You know, and then I think Clinton, you know, clearly won the town hall style debate, you know, which was a forum that he did great in. So, you know, I mean, mainly there was dissatisfaction with George H.W. Bush because of the recession. And so, you know, Perot's entrance in the race mainly just took, you know, hurt Bush that year.
But the messaging is two people working against the existing president. And, of course, that does change people's minds when they see two different candidates knowing that one's got to go. You're almost down to Clinton Perot at that point right?
But it really, yes, that's true. And then it became, you know, the Clinton, these biographical commercials are very important. The Reagan one that you just played was really an ad that introduced Reagan to the public. And Clinton had a really effective biographical commercial. He had the good fortune of growing up in a town called Hope. And he, you know, had great commercials showing his, you know, his rise and his hard work. And there was footage of him as a young boy meeting John F. Kennedy. So it was a sort of combination of an inspirational message of hope, you know, against the bad economic conditions. And he ran a campaign as an outsider. Somebody would come in from the South and come in and change things in Washington.
David, it's amazing what you have here. This is a true archive, and I'm really impressed by the fact that you have things going back to 1952. I'm rather surprised that some of those early ads even existed. Did you find these in various sources?
Presidential libraries.
There's a bunch of different archives. I mean, the best single source is the presidential libraries. So
they would have, each of these presidents would have something that would still be in existence for these.
Each of those libraries, you know, held on to the videotapes, you know, the older format of videotapes. And so we went around to those libraries and, you know, the Kennedy Library is a great collection, the Nixon Library, even, you know, there is all the winning presidents, all the winning candidates get their own libraries. If you lose an election, you don't get one.
You don't get a library.
There's a good point. Good point there.
Yeah, but we were able to round up the commercials. You know, we went to some of the candidates directly. You know, we went to Dukakis, you know, back when we were setting up the site. We originally did this site as a gallery exhibition at our museum in Astoria in New York. And then the internet, that was back in 1992. And then as the internet emerged, we realized this would be a great exhibition for the internet.
Well, again,
so what's great about it, when people go onto the site, you can jump around, you know, from one year to another.
Oh, it's absolutely fascinating. Yeah,
it's the fun part of it.
Absolutely fascinating. The livingroomcandidate.org, and this is David Schwartz. He's the chief curator for the Museum of the Moving Image and this exhibit. David, thank you so much, and enjoy your Labor Day, pal.
Thanks. You too. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Top stories and Janice Jackson. She's the chief education officer for Chicago Public Schools. She's joining us next on 720 WGN. All right, it's Dave Plyer in for Steve Cochran here on 720 WGN. Today is Chicago's very own legendary comedian Bob Newhart's 87th birthday. The Bob Newhart Show, Newhart, award-winning comedy albums, movies, and so many TV appearances. Bob Newhart is an American icon. He's also still touring and doing stand-up as well. I got to talk to Bob about his early days in Chicago, comedy, and the support that he got from WGN Radio with Eddie Hubbard and Wally Phillips and others right here on WGN. Let's listen to a little conversation with Bob Newhart.
Hi, Dave. You know, it's still funny to hear WGN 720 on the dial. I mean, that's where it's been all my life.
Yeah, you know,
Wally Phillips and Eddie Hubbard, wasn't it? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Jack Brickhouse.
So many of the guys who were so great to me when my first album came out, and they were good friends. Yeah.
Well, people, I'm sure know. I mean, you are one of Chicago's very own. You grew up in Oak Park.
Well, no, I was born in Oak Park. The hospital was in Oak Park, so I had no choice. I had to be born in Oak Park.
Gotcha.
Spent my childhood until I was about 30 in Austin. But I always say Oak Park because it sounds posher.
It certainly does. But, I mean, you came back to the area because obviously you went to St. Ignatius High School.
Right.
And Loyola University. And what were you studying at Loyola?
It was kind of strange. I was studying liberal arts, and then I thought I was going to go to law school, and so I said, well, maybe a business background may be better for law school, which is not necessarily true, by the way. So I switched to commerce, and had like a minor in accounting.
Okay.
And then I went in service for 2 years and then came out and knocked around Chicago. I worked for the Glidden Company and the U.S. Gypsum downtown. I said, "The hell with it! I got to try comedy and see if I can make a living doing it. And if I can't, at least I won't spend the rest of my life saying."
What if
a road never taken? I wonder what would have happened.
Yeah.
So fortunately, I gave it a year. Then a year became two, and two became three. But there was always something on the horizon. And then Dan Sorkin, who was with the WCFL then, I guess it's WLS now.
Yep.
He introduced me to the Warner Brother people, and they gave me a recording contract. And they said, "Don't we'll record you at your next nightclub." And I said, "Well, see, there's a problem. I've never worked a nightclub."
Right, right.
So we'll have to get you on a nightclub. So it took about a year because most nightclubs are. What do you mean the guy's never? never. This is the first club. No one wanted to take a chance. So. We found a place in Houston, the Tidelands, and I went down there. Wow, this is January of 1960, and recorded the album down there. And I thought it might make it might be a nice adjunct to a stand-up career. Maybe maybe sell 25,000, and you go into a town and eight or ten people have heard of you and they come in to see you. But the album just went crazy. It sold. The last count I heard was 1.5 million. So,
Well, here's the thing. You topped, at the time, an album by Elvis, the cast album, The Sound of Music. It won Album of the Year at the 1961 Grammy Awards and Best New Artist as well. It was the first comedy album to win and only time for a comedian who has won Best New Artist. The album was a 2006 entry into the Library of Congress National Recording Registry, and according to an NPR interview you did, it's one of the best-selling albums of all time, which is amazing right out of the box.
That's what, yeah. That was, we were talking earlier about going to see Rickles, and I was backstage, and there were some three girls, and they were just breaking into comedy, and they said, "Is it true that your first album was the first time you ever played in a nightclub?" I said, "Yeah." They said, "Wow, that's amazing."
It is. Well, then you came back with another album that same year.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And it was interesting that I always tell the story that the first album went to number one, and the second album went to number two, and then the second album went to number one, and the first album went to number two. And it was on, I had the number one and number two album for like, I think it was like 20 weeks or something,
wow.
which had never happened before. But then a couple of years ago, Axl Rose, they had the number one and number two album. And
damn them.
And they stayed on longer than I did, so. So I no longer had the record, but I always said, "Well, at least, you know, at least it went to a friend."
Yeah, know? Right. So
it didn't hurt nearly as much knowing that Axe, you know, got the new record.
Right.
Yeah, well, I just got off the phone with Axe, as a matter of fact.
Oh, did you? How's it going?
Yeah, we talked almost every day.
Really?
Dave Plyer in for Steve Cochran on 720 WGN. We're talking to Chicago's very own, the legendary Bob Newhart, on his 87th birthday. I talked to Bob of the beginnings of the Bob Newhart Show and the award-winning finale of his second series, Newhart.
Mary Tyler Moore started MTM Productions, and her husband at the time, Grant Tinker, asked you if you wanted to get off the road and do a TV show.
Well, yeah. Actually, MTM was founded by Mary Tyler Moore, Grant Tinker, her husband, and Arthur Price, who was my manager also, and also Mary's manager. So Arthur came to me and said, "Would you like to do a series?" And I was traveling. I was doing stand up and away from the family. And I said, "Yeah, you know, I'd like to live a kind of normal life." And so I got together with Dave Davis, Lorenzo Music, and we sat around and batted around ideas and came up with the idea of the Bob Newhart Show. And then we were lucky enough to get Susie as my wife, and Peter Bonners and Bill Daly, who Bill, of course, was a Chicagoan. I knew Bill years before the album came out.
And you met Peter?
He's a stage manager at MAQ.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that, and I know you met Peter on the set of Catch 22. I think, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
You and Suzanne, boy, I'll tell you, you had the premise. You know, you came up with the premise of being a psychiatrist, a little bit more of an adult show, an amazing writing team. You and Suzanne had just amazing chemistry.
Yeah, that was special, and of course we lost Suzanne a couple of years ago, and we just recently lost Marcia.
Yeah.
But when I started Newhart, the Vermont show, I went to Mary Fran and I said, "Mary, you know, you're going to have a very tough job because Susie and I had this chemistry, and it's just hard. It's, you know, people are going to compare you to Susie, and you know," I said, it's going to be tough, and it was tough. It was tough for Mary.
But you know, there's certain expectations when you establish a character and such an amazing show like the Bob Newhart Show, to repeat that is almost unheard of, and you did just that.
Yes, that's true. It wasn't quite as competitive a world as it is now. I mean, we really had ABC, NBC, and CBS. And, you know, you didn't have You had like GN, you know, which was an independent, but you didn't have all these cable shows. So it's a much tougher competition now because of all the cable competition.
142 episodes, six incredible years. You were ready to go off after the fifth, and you know you stayed. Then they pushed for a seventh season, and you said, "Nope, that's it. We've done an amazing show. I want to go off on top."
Yeah, I had seen too many shows. It's funny, there was something on the AOL or one of the, you know, or mm-hmm. Google, one of them, and they listed shows that have stayed on too long, and there were quite a few of them, and I had seen shows that had stayed on a year or 2 years too long, and I didn't want to be a show that had stayed on a year too long. And it was tough because, you know, you have these people and their friends, and you're pulling the plug on their livelihood. But it was for the good of the show, and they're good people. They're going to, you know, get other jobs because they're good at what they do.
Sure.
And of course, it starts with the writing. There's no question about we just had great writing. I just had dinner the other day with Patchett and Tarsus. With Patchett and mm-hmm. Or with Tarsus. I'm sorry, and we went over, and they wrote some really great things. It was really the writing, and then we had an incredible cast, and I think that's why it holds up because the writing was so good.
It was, and you know what? And I like the fact that. You know, so many shows, especially at that time, try to bring in kids and did they ever approach you at that time and say, "Yeah, we want you two to have a baby," and you said no?
Originally, we talked about having a family, and I said that was one of my conditions. I said, "No, I don't want to do a show, you know, where daddy's the dolt and yeah. he gets himself in all kinds of trouble, and then." And then the wife and the kids all huddle together, and how do we get daddy out of this problem he got himself into? And then they do, and then they just kind of smile and pat daddy on the head, you know.
Right.
And, yeah. You know, he's yeah. not very bright, but we love him, yeah. you know. And yeah. and that wasn't the kind of show I wanted to do. So in the sixth year, the final year of Newhart, the Bob Newhart show, the writers wrote a script because they were trying to talk me into doing a seventh year where Suzanne was pregnant. And so they sent me the script, and we shot our show on Friday night, and then I'd get the script for next week, and I'd look at it generally Sunday. So, and I read this script, and Suzanne is pregnant, and we're going to have a baby. And so I called up Mike Zinberg, the producer, and I said, I read the script, he said, and he was kind of nervous about it. He said, how did you like it? I said, it's very funny. I said, it's a very funny script. He said, oh, good, because we were a little worried, you know, that maybe you weren't going to care for it. I said, no, it's very funny. I said, who are you going to get to play Bob? And there was this long silence, and they said, oh, okay, all right, just checking.
Got yeah. it, right, yeah, exactly. And we talked to Bob about the season series finale of Newhart, which was legendary, probably the most legendary season finale of all time. TV Guide named it the most unexpected series finale in TV history, but I got to say, from a memorable standpoint, I think it was shocking. It was such a well-kept secret at that time that you were doing that.
It was. It was... A lot of people knew. The interesting thing about the show, we hadn't told the crew. I had told the cast that week that what we were going to do, but we hadn't told the crew. So this was on our final tape night, and the crew went to dinner, and they came back, and we said, oh, we added the scene. And so we had the bedroom set from the Bob Newhart show, but we had what they call a floater in front of it, blocking.
Gotcha. I was going to ask you how you did that. Okay.
But the audience, you know, we do that with other sets just to focus the attention on the audience there.
Sure.
And so we pulled back the floater, and the people started applauding the set. They recognized the set from the Bob Newhart show.
I bet they did.
They started applauding the set.
It's Bob Newhart's 87th birthday. Happy birthday to you, pal. That was a legendary last episode, wasn't it?
Was the whole thing just a dream?
The whole thing was just a dream, Dave. The whole thing was just a dream. But wow. Legendary to see that bedroom and all that.
Right.
And Suzanne Plachet.
I have to tell you, everybody at work the next day, that's all they were talking about.
Yeah.
Was that series
big
finale.
Water cooler moment. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Conjunction Junction, what's your function?
Hooking up cars and making them function.
Good morning, Conjunction, it's Dave Player. In for Steve Cochran on 720 WGN. So schools in the burbs and some of Chicago's private schools started school already in the last 2 weeks, but tomorrow is the first day of school for Chicago Public Schools. CPS is the third largest school district in the United States, with more than 600 schools providing education to approximately 400,000 children. And joining us to talk about back to school, test scores, and school safety is the Chief Education Officer of Chicago Public Schools, and that is Janice Jackson. Janice, good morning to you.
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I am excellent. You remember that Conjunction Junction song, don't you?
I did. I laughed a bit when I heard it. That was a great introduction.
Schoolhouse Rock, absolutely. So tomorrow's the big day. First day back at school.
Yes, yes. No, tomorrow's a great day. I appreciate the opportunity to come on and just remind our students and families about the importance of attending school on the first day of school. So thank you for the opportunity.
I know it sounds crazy, but there is a faction of students that don't show up on the first day, and that is kind of critical, especially when you know that other schools have been in school for the last couple of weeks already. You got to get your kids in school, obviously, tomorrow.
Yeah, well, one of the things that's important to note is that CPS definitely has a longer school day. So despite the fact that we start later, we end later, making us one of the longest school years in the state. But there's a lot of research that shows that students who miss the beginning of school, they just start off on the right track, and that impacts their outcomes throughout the year. So each year we start a campaign reminding families that school is important and that they have to attend on the first day. Last week we did phone banks of over 30,000 homes, just reminding our students who missed school last year or missed more than 5 days last year about coming to school.
Very good. Very cool. Now let's look at some recently released statistics, really over the last week or so.
Yeah.
What was the attendance rate last year?
Our attendance rate for last school year was 93.6%, which was an increase over time. We're also excited to post new gains in NWEA, which is the assessment. It's a national assessment that our elementary school students take. And what that data told us is that 6 out of 10 of our students are reading at or above grade level, and about 55% of our students are performing proficiently in math at or above grade level. This is much higher than in years past, so we're just excited about the incremental growth over time, and it really just shows how hard our teachers and students are working, and it's paying off.
Graduation rates, those are up. What are we seeing here this last year compared to previous years?
Well, this year we recently released we released our graduation rates, and we're so excited to see an increase yet again over the past 5 years. This year, our five-year rate is 73.5%. You may remember that 20 years ago, about half of CPS students graduated.
Right.
So
yeah.
To see it, you know, a gains of this magnitude really speak to what's happening, not only in our high schools, because it starts in our elementary schools. So it just shows that a lot of the investments we've made around preschool and just higher quality education options at the elementary and high school level are paying off. As a former high school principal, I know the importance of a high school graduation. You can take
Absolutely.
A quick look online and see that when students finish high school, they just have a totally different trajectory. And we just want to have more students go to high school, but more importantly, more students go to college and finish.
Any significant curriculum changes this year?
No, not this year. What we're doing is continuing to double down on the Common Core state standards. Those standards are extremely rigorous, and our teachers had to make several shifts when we started implementing about 4 years ago. But again, the data is showing us that our students are doing better than ever. And it's a national set of standards, which is, you know, different than what we were measured against in the past.
Now, Diet High School was closed. It's reopening this year with a new art focus. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, my history with Diet is long, so this is one that really gives me great excitement. You probably remember last year there was a lot of coverage around what was happening at Diet.
Yep.
But here we are a year later, ready to open the school. The principal there, Beulah McLeod, was a fantastic choice, and we selected her for one reason in particular. We knew that she would work and engage the community in an effective way, and she didn't let us down. We also knew that she had proven leadership, and as a result, we have more students attending the school than we expected. So the goal was 125 ninth graders, and she has about 150 enrolled now with more and more students on the waiting list.
Very cool. Very excited about that as well. Now, something very important, Janice, to talk about is school safety, safe passage. Nothing is more important than the safety of our kids. I know we have 142 routes, two new ones this school year as well.
Yeah. Well, the Safe Passage is a phenomenal program. One thing that we didn't note, and I think is important to say, is that we know that Safe Passage matters because students feel more safe when they come to school. The schools that have Safe Passage, the attendance was about 86% prior to Safe Passage. Now it's well above 92%. And I believe that tells you a lot. If students feel that they can get to and from school safely, then they're more likely to attend. Obviously, we selected Diet. It's a new school reopening. We wanted to make sure that transition was as smooth as possible. And the other selected school was Al Raby High School, which is located in the West Garfield Park community. And it was just really important to make sure that those students are traveling to and from school and that they feel safe. As a teacher and as a parent, I feel excited that school has started because we know for 8 hours of the day where our children are. We know that they're safe because we know that our children face a lot of challenges in many of the communities here in Chicago.
Yeah, Safe Passage is critical, and I'm glad to see that continuing to expand. I'm going to switch gears just for a little bit. City voters have said that they want an elected school board, but legislation to allow one is still stalled in Springfield. We're the only school district really in the state that does not have elected representation. Does that need to change?
I think that's the wrong question. If people feel that the school board doesn't reflect them, I think that that's a misconception, especially with the school board that we have in place now. I think that people should take advantage of attending board meetings, the open office hours that our board members have, and really just inviting them out to their schools or local communities, because I know for a fact that they attend most of those meetings when those requests are made. I don't know that an elected school board is the answer to all of our questions. I think that a lot more can be done at the local school level with the local school councils that are elected and made up mostly of parents and community members.
But having someone elected and representing from the voters and from the parents themselves might feel there's a little bit more of a comfort zone there and a little opportunity to drive things in a direction on behalf of their children. So hopefully we can look at that too and get to some point. Otherwise, yes, attend your local school board meetings as well. First day of school, Chicago Public Schools, is tomorrow. I'm sure you'll be out there bright and early too. And for more on the first day back, check your local school's website or visit cps.edu. Janice Jackson, she's the Chief Education Officer for Chicago Public Schools. Thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your Labor Day.
You too. Thanks, Dave.
All right. Thanks, Janice. Good morning. It's Dave Plyer and for Steve Cochran on 720 WGN. Happy Labor Day to you. Celebrating those of us who worked or work. Dave, we're working, Andy, on
this Labor Day. As I said earlier, it's a labor of love.
It's a labor of love. Exactly. Do you remember what your first job was? What was your first job?
Radio job or regular job?
In general, your first ever job.
I was a gopher in a store. I did a little of everything, actually.
What store would that be?
It was a clothing store in a Woodmar shopping center in Hammond, Indiana.
Oh, look at that.
And
16, 15?
I was 18.
Okay, all right. That was the first gig
for you. I was 18. Now, they let me, you know, go out and try my hand at selling, which I wasn't very good at, but they also gave me a broom and a vacuum cleaner and washed windows. Yeah. I did everything.
What did you learn from that first job?
Well, I learned on really how to work with people.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
Which is what we have to do in this business.
Absolutely,
you know, it was how to work with people, not only your colleagues and coworkers, but the public as well.
Absolutely.
You know, everybody's different, so
Absolutely.
You're going to get a whole mix of people.
Andy, what about you?
I had the fortunate honor of sweeping up hair at a beauty salon.
Oh, okay. Oh, nice.
Right near my house, I could ride my bike to it.
Okay. Did you know somebody there? Did you?
No. Oh, okay. Stocking the shelves and towels,
yeah.
You know, and those kind of things.
Okay. What was minimum wage? Do you remember?
Oh, goodness.
Oh, no, for us it was $3.35.
Yeah,
it was like
two and a quarter
for you.
An hour.
Yeah, it was like $3.50, $4.
$3.35. Yeah. Bennett, what about you, buddy? What was your first ever job? Not radio job, first job.
I was a lifeguard, actually, at a country club.
Really? Oh, posh. How posh is that?
Hey, you know what? What can I tell you?
Jim, what about you? What was your first gig, bud?
I was a counselor at a day camp in Mount Greenwood when I was 13.
That's nice. You're outdoors, hanging out and stuff.
Which is good. You got paid for it.
I did that, too. I worked for my first gig was when I was 15. I worked for the water and sewer department in the town that I grew up in. So we built up, with railroad ties, we built up a creek. We would paint fire hydrants. We would get down and help clean out sewer. I mean, it was a lot of dirty work. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we were there from 6:30 in the morning till noon outside. And so you got a good tan. You were working out because you were carrying, you know, railroad ties and sewer caps and all kinds of other good stuff. So that's what that was kind of. But that was like my first gig for a couple months. And then my second job, and I know this will tick some people off, but that's just what it was. It was an available job that I saw posted in my high school. And I went to Holy Cross High School. Is they needed people to do phone calls for the Reagan-Bush campaign.
So you were a telemarketer.
Yeah, I was a telemarketer for about 19. I'm trying to think what that was. 1984? Would that be 84? Probably 83, 84.
For the second Reagan election, that was 84.
84. Yeah. So it was if the elections were held today, and then I had like a series of questions, and I got hung up on like, you know, 80% of the time. But the first real job I had was Musicland. You know, working for a record chain.
Oh, the old Musicland, sure.
Which I ended up running, you know, a million-dollar store when I was going to college, and I actually became a DM. They paid for part of my college and everything else. But that was when you got vacation time when you were a part-timer.
Mm-hmm.
You got
really?
Paid 20-hour-a-week vacation.
There was a Musicland store right over here off of Randolph.
I ran that one. Before I left for Minneapolis.
And we probably crossed paths and didn't even know it because I was in there a lot.
92. I ran that for about 6 months in 92. But the one I worked at was on Harlem and Forest Preserve Drive across from Harlem Irving. Mm-hmm. It was a Music Works. It was about maybe 30,000 square foot store.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a stage. We'd have performances in there.
Wow.
Like the Police performed in there.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And we sold incense. Mm-hmm. And we sold, but we did albums. We had, I remember when we started doing movie rentals and all that other good stuff, but there was a Ticketron in there.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't a Ticketmaster. It was a Ticketron.
Ticketron.
I think what I learned from my first job was ask. If you don't know how to do it, just ask. And I was looking at the Business Insider, put together a list of the things you learned from your first job. Number one, figure it out, which is totally true. Don't whine. Don't complain that there's nobody guiding you. Just figure it out because people have a lot more respect for you doing that. Two, working with others, like you said, Dave, can teach you how to communicate effectively.
Absolutely.
Three, work hard. And I tell my kids that all the time, especially about my son. I'm like, you know, here's the order of things. You work hard and then you play hard. So you can play and have a great time, but you got to get that job done first. So if you're doing something during the day, schedule all the things you have to do first. But that's the truth at work, too. You know, show your boss you're working hard. You go places.
And I got a quarter raise when I first couple of months on the job.
See,
so
look at
it was
that.
$2.50
Must have been doing
hour.
Something right.
Wow.
Look at that. Number four, try not to burn bridges.
Oh, yeah.
Most important.
Oh, yeah.
Because you meet everybody wherever you're going, on the way up, on the way down, on the way sideways. Yeah, don't.
It's a small world.
Yeah, don't ever burn a bridge. And I've known a lot of people that have burned a lot of bridges. So
they probably came to regret it.
That's right. Keep cool in tough situations. Number six, and this is my favorite, suck it up and just do it. Right? You know, and I always say, too, you know, if you've got a list of tasks, do the toughest one first. Get it out of the way. Because, you know, don't procrastinate the worst part of it. Get the first one done. Bring a notebook everywhere. Take notes. Even at my job today, and I run a marketing firm, people come into my office for a meeting and they don't have a pen and a paper or at least a tablet or a cell phone taking notes. I send them out. Go get some. You know, you're not going to remember this. Go get your notes, and you got to teach people that. Right, pay attention to detail. Hard work pays off. And number 10, dress for the job you want, not the job you have. I thought that was pretty important. Yeah. So dress for success. So think for this.
And you know what? Yeah. We were told you will wear a suit and tie for your job interview.
Yeah, we did.
Will wear a suit and tie. And I've seen people come in for job interviews. Yeah, well,
but it depends on the job too, because I they used to make us wear a shirt and tie at a record store, and that's what should make people feel comfortable. That wasn't the right atmosphere for that. But for the younger generation, Bennett, is what I'm saying is, and you're okay.
All right, let's put your millennial card. Get it out of your system.
Is do not, you know, kind of watch where you're getting your tattoos, because you know you got to strategically place them, because not a lot of people want to see that, depending on the job that you have.
I'm wearing shorts and a short sleeve button down.
I can't see anything. No, I can't at all. But that is important, because I've seen it like from the ear down the neck. It's like, I don't know what you expect to do in life. Maybe there's a gig out there for you for the next 50 years that nobody cares about that. But just kind of watch where those tattoos go. That's what I say. Watch where those tattoos go. Hey, listen, we've got many live guests in studio this morning, as well as our morning team. So my thanks to Michael from Bang Bang Pie for bringing over some of their amazing homemade biscuits, homemade jam, pies, coffees, tea this morning. Good morning to you, Michael.
Good morning, David. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Tell me a little bit in 30 seconds about your place.
Sure. We're a pie and biscuit shop. We have locations in Logan Square and Ravenswood on the north side. We serve Midwestern comfort food.
It is.
Biscuits and gravy, chicken pot pie, grits, sweet pie.
Chicken pot
pie. Don't forget the bacon.
And the bacon.
Oh, the candy
Everyone's
bacon.
Favorite bacon.
Yeah, we're having some candy bacon right now. What are some of the pies that are in season right now? I know they're going to change a little bit.
Indeed. Yeah, we're heading into late summer. Peaches at peak. Late summer raspberries, the pies I brought you, hopefully you'll enjoy in a little bit, is a baked honey pie. So it's a honey custard with just a simple, beautiful raspberries from McClug Family Farm.
Wow, very nice. And then we're going to be converting over into some apple and some cranberry. And
that's exactly right. Apple, pear, cranberry, pumpkin will come in there. We'll also get a little bit richer chocolate pies, a little bit darker and denser, more hearty pies.
Very cool. Bang Bang Pies located 2051 North California in Logan Square, and their newest location, 4947 North Damon Avenue in Ravenswood. For more information, visit bangbangpie.com. Thanks, Michael.
Welcome to Jeff's Homemade Game Show. I'm Jeff Rogers, and we're at one lucky family's house who are going to compete for huge money and prizes. Or if they lose, they'll get stuff from my garage. Could go either way. Welcome to the bathroom. And let's also bring in our friends, the Winklers. Now, I don't know about you, but when I'm in the bathroom and I reach for toilet paper, I better not find an empty roll. Is that a problem here in the house?
Yes. All the time.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to find out how much toilet paper is actually on the roll this time with a game we like to call the Toilet Roll Relay. Here's what you need to do, Winklers. You're going to need to take this roll of toilet paper, but here's the deal. You cannot tear the roll, and it has to still be connected to the toilet paper roll right here. Can you do it? $100. Are you guys ready?
Yes!
All right.
We can do this.
And begin.
Go.
Oh, this is how much toilet paper I usually use.
It's Dave Plyer and for Steve Cochran on 720 WGN. And there's a new game show ready to launch right here in Chicago. And they're looking for interested families around town to participate. It's called Jeff's Homemade Game Show. And to talk about it all is actor, producer, and Second City alum, Jeff Rogers. Jeff, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So you've got this new show you're working on. I love that your mission is to keep this production in Chicago. Game shows have been hot over the summer with the return of Match Game with Alec Baldwin, $100,000 Pyramid, Family Feud. So this is pretty exciting.
It is. It's really fun. And the whole idea of doing it here is that, you know, I grew up watching game shows and really I grew up in a family of 11 kids. My parents had to make everything a game because it was, you know, Lord of the Flies. It was a competition in my house and everything was a game. They made it all fun. And so I want to take that and bring that out to other homes and do that here locally because Otherwise, you got to go to the coast.
Yeah, we haven't had anything like as far as a game show here in decades. And you know, you always hear, where are you from? I'm from Pasadena. I'm from Huntington Beach. I'm
right.
Yeah, so it's nice to have it here in Chicago. So tell me what the show's all about.
So the idea is it's sort of like Uncle Buck comes over to play The Price is Right.
Okay.
And so right. I'm Uncle Buck, and I'm having some fun. And, you know, we...
Do you just show up randomly at people's
no,
homes?
Oh, no, okay, we don't. Good, my mom right. was very upset about the idea of that. She actually...
That you were just going to show up?
Just show up. That yeah. people won't like that. They won't like it. So I said, no, we get contestants. They agree to play. But we show up at the house, and they don't know... you know, what games we're going to play or how we're going to play them. And we utilize every room in the house and just come up with games that are fun, that are in the house itself and create the fun as a family.
I like it because there's some true spontaneity behind all this, obviously, because you're walking through this house for the first time.
Oh, that's the fun of it. In fact, we've already gotten on the website. We have a sign up for to be a contestant, homemadegameshow.com. And our first family that we did, you can watch the video of them. The mom was wearing a shirt with dance moves on it, plié, jeté. And and so we made that into a game that the dad had to perform those dance moves that were listed on the shirt. And he almost pulled a hammy, but he did okay.
Now, you said you're looking for contestants.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're in the process of getting this developed for a network. And we have a contestant sign-up form. And you know, one of the contestants wrote us after she signed up and said, well, do you let us know when you're coming? Can I have a chance to clean my house? And the
good question.
Other producers, Bob Murray, who's an Emmy-winning director, and Bob Kopak wrote back and said, you know, listen, that may help you or may not. You know, a slightly messy house may actually win you more points and win you more money. So it's up to you. So it's a great team. The three of us, Bob Murray and Bob Kopak and I have been developing this for about a year plus, and it's been a lot of fun to do. And everybody we've talked to has been great, had a huge response from it. And they love the idea of it. So, and we've gotten, we put it up on Facebook, I think last Thursday, and it's gotten, it's already gotten almost 15,000 hits.
Oh, that's
views.
Awesome.
So yeah, there's
The pilot's a lot of fun. Showed the kids too. It was a lot of fun. Now you're looking for ideas for some of the games too.
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of the really fun parts of this is that if you played something as a kid or, you know, your parents did something fun or your family always played a silly game, great. Submit it. We'll pay you if we use that game on the show. We love the idea of it. In fact, one of the games we were talking about last night was, you know, Floor of Lava, which is, do you remember as a kid trying to get across the floor, right? The floor is lava
and you have to get across the
floor. Yeah. How much fun would it be to make an entire family have to do that to get from the living room to the dining room or from the kitchen to the, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And they can't touch the floor.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. And what we were listening to in the beginning of the show was you were taking a roll of toilet paper, which is such a simple idea, and see how far it stretched around the house and if you can get it to the curb.
Yep. Yeah. They have to get it down to the front door.
But you're betting back and forth of whether you can or can't. Are you going to risk this to do this?
Exactly. There's stages of it so that it becomes much more, you know, intense as we go to the next stage. Yeah. You know, they really start talking about, okay, do we want to risk the $50 or are we going to keep it right now? You know, how much toilet paper did you lose? Did you use last night?
And what do they get? Again, they get something from your garage.
Well, if they win, they get either prizes or money or gift certificates, something along those lines. If they lose, they actually win a prize from my garage, which is great because it helps me clean out the garage. And for them, no one actually loses when they're
Nobody
on Jeff's
does.
Homemade game show.
Nobody
exactly.
does. Exactly. So what do you got with you there?
So I've actually got, if you want to play a quick game.
Yeah, real quick.
All right. So we have just a couple of seconds. How about the next person who waves, will they use right hand or left hand?
Ooh, I'm going to say left hand. Oh, it was the left hand.
Yeah,
did you hear it was the left hand? Thank you. What do I get?
Nice,
what do I get? What
nice.
Do I get?
You'll actually win
outside 10, of the showcase we're talking about.
$10. Yes,
by.
Exactly. $10. If you had lost, I brought along a US 66.
So I won 10 bucks and you get a Route 66 sign. I'd rather take with the
You're
going to
go with the sign?
I'm gonna
Fantastic.
Go with the sign,
I didn't bring any cash.
All right. So how do we great. How do we stay connected to the show?
Yeah, please do. Check us out at homemadegameshow.com. Sign up for the show or like us on Facebook at Jeff's Homemade Game Show and let us know that you'd like to see a local game show produced here in Chicago.
Beautiful. Jeff Rogers. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for having me in.
Let's go. Taking the afternoon off. It
It's Dave Player in for Steve Cochran on 720 WGN. So there's never been a better time to be a Cubs fan in Chicago. Am I right, Andy?
Amen. Amen. Can I get an amen?
Final month of regular season baseball where we're pretty close to clinching the division already. It's pretty unheard of.
Magic number is 11.
Okay.
So that's that means it's getting really, really close to clinching time.
All right. And then 40 games over 500.
Best record in baseball. Back to 40 games over 500. They equaled that a couple of days ago. And 88 wins. Think about this. Last year, this overachieving team had 97 wins, and there's still 3 weeks left of the season.
Wow. Wow. And yeah, I was going to say, how many home games do we have left?
There's a handful. It's this is a road trip coming up here, and then another homestand, and then a quick road trip, and then another homestand.
I'm gonna tell you, being at these games, and I've hit probably more than I ever have. What I love is, we were talking before the show started. We were at 13 innings yesterday, and you asked me, "Did you stay?"
You better have.
And
you did,
and I did, and that's something my grandfather and my father taught me long ago: is to you stay till the end of a game. You be a true fan. Don't have to get in the car to try to beat traffic crap. But I'm amazed though at I'm going to say 95% of the people who were there stayed there during that game as well. But there were a few behind home plate, which are probably the most valuable seats in the game, and those are the ones that are empty.
Yeah.
How could you walk away from that?
That's tough to do. Yeah. I mean, if I spent that much on a seat, I'd stay till the end.
I would stay to the end as well. Absolutely. Now, why can't you own a piece of historic Wrigley Field this year? You can. Cubs Authentics, which benefits Chicago Cubs charities, is a premier outlet for all MLB authenticated game used autographed Cubs memorabilia, from game used jerseys and baseballs to autographed items and one of a kind Wrigley Field collection items. And joining us this morning is John Morrison. He's the Assistant Director, Brand Development and Activation for your Chicago Cubs. Good morning to you, John.
Morning, Dave. Appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Now, I told you this a few years ago. I think one of my son's most prized possessions is an actual used base from a game that we attended. What are some of the game-used items that we can find on game days?
Yeah, no, I mean, we love the fact that you and your son have come to enjoy Cubs Authentics. It's certainly a unique way for people to connect with the Cubs. Every game we have game used baseballs, we have game used bases, bats, jerseys, caps, helmets, lineup cards. I mean, we are taking the items that the players and the teams using on the field and making them available for fans that day.
Which is so cool. I mean, when you walk by that stand and you see the bases there, you know, when we first saw that, they're like, my son was like, "What is that?" And it's from today's game, or it's from yesterday's game, or whatever it might be. So, you know, especially if you're not only taking your kids and you want some kind of piece of memorabilia from a memorable game, or you're taking a client, what a great way to walk away from a game with a piece of what was on the field.
Yeah, you know, it's a fun opportunity. And one thing that's interesting about the bases is the majority of them, we have a custom base jewel on the side. So it'll show the matchup, the location, you know, Wrigley Field, of course, the game date. So if there is a birthday or an anniversary or some sort of, you know, work outing, it's nice to that there's that, you know, detailed piece of the base that can really, you know, commemorate that special event.
So those are the game day pieces, but you also have quite a bit for the Wrigley Field collection. Tell me what you can get from Wrigley itself.
Sure. Well, and you know, I think we all realize that we're lucky to play in such an iconic venue, and that there's an appeal of Wrigley Field beyond just the Cubs. I think baseball fans, Chicagoans, even, you know, fans of history and architecture, you know, see some value in Wrigley Field. So we saw that a few years ago and decided, hey, let's make items from Wrigley Field, not just the team available, whether it's signage, flags. We're going to have some seats coming on sale available upcoming. So it's just a really unique way for baseball fans, Cubs fans, to connect with the ballpark. We actually last night just launched our Flags of Wrigley Field auction. It's an annual auction that we do. It's going to close this upcoming Sunday, the 11th at 8 p.m. So go to cubs.com/authentics. If you click on the auction tab, you'll see some pretty neat items right now that are available from the Wrigley Field collection.
Well, I think it's important too, because, you know, you go to auctions, you go to charity auctions and stuff. Some of the stuff is authenticated, some of it isn't. I mean, this is obviously guaranteed authenticated at the ballpark and by your organization. And I think that is pretty critical when you're owning a piece of history like this.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we certainly think so. We noticed a few years ago, as Major League Baseball did, that as people got more interested in autographs and and more interested in game-used items. That I think the unfortunate negative that comes with that is there's more a higher prevalence for fraud. So, you know, Major League Baseball stepped in and said, hey, let's come up with a mechanism that we can really make sure that fans of our game are connecting with it and getting items straight from the field and getting the correct items and getting items that we say they're getting. So it's just a really neat way for you to guarantee you're getting an item that's 100% authentic.
And there's a kiosk located in the Wrigley Field concourse. You don't have to be at a game to buy. You can go online to cubs.com/authentics or go to 773-404-4753. Now, you can pre-order items for a game as well, right?
Yeah, no, you certainly can. If you're at the game, go to the Cubs Authentics kiosk behind home plate. Pat Maniher and Nick Hobbs are always there. They are outstanding to deal with, happy to help you. But if you can't come to the game, please do. Send them an email, cubsauthentics@cubs.com. You can pre-order bases, baseballs, if you know you're coming to a game. If you want to find out if they have bases from a game you were at, or maybe there's a birthday or an anniversary or some date that you want to see from a past game that you want to see if there's bases still available, please do give them an email, cubsauthentics@cubs.com.
And this is really important, too. All sales benefit Chicago Cubs charities. So how did that charity arm start? Who does it benefit?
Yeah, you know, we started this last year where all proceeds from Cubs Authentics will benefit Cubs charities. And we're trying to support the Diamond Project. What the Diamond Project does is you know, it's capital improvements projects in the city. We want to improve availability and accessibility to local baseball facilities. And, you know, when we have this Cubs Authentics business and we're driving this revenue, we really wanted to come up with a resource or a place we could put it in the city to really give back by taking all the net revenue from Cubs Authentics and dumping it into Cubs Charities and the Diamond Project. It's really driving a lot of value for the organization, for the city.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, and I know you have something you're going to give away to a lucky listener today. What do you got, John?
Yeah, well, no. Pat and Nick, we're happy to provide me with a game-used baseball from one of our wins the other day against the San Francisco Giants, so we'd be more than happy to make that available to one of your listeners.
Beautiful. We'll take the seventh caller, 312-981-7200. Seventh caller, 312-981-7200, a game-used baseball from Cubs Authentics. And again, the kiosk is located in the Wrigley Field Concourse. You can go to www.cubs.com/authentics, and you can also purchase over the phone at 773-404-4753. And the Cubs play today at 120, just across the border in Milwaukee on WGN-TV. John, thank you so much, pal.
Thanks so much, Dave. Have a good one.
All right, go Cubbies. All right, it's Dave Plyer in for Steve Cochran on this Labor Day morning. Beautiful Monday morning on 720 WGN. So NBC, Chicago PD, Chicago Fire, Chicago Med are three of the hottest TV shows on television. In early 2017, Make Room for One More with the premiere of Chicago Justice. Now, the season premiere of Chicago PD is on Wednesday, September 21st at 9 Central. And there's only one of the stars of the show that is truly from Chicagoland, and that's Harvey, Illinois native LaRoyce Hawkins, who plays Officer Ken Atwater. LaRoyce, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, it's good to be here. Happy Labor Day.
Happy Labor Day to you as well. I appreciate you coming down here.
Thanks
you know,
for having
me. You are the only cast member that actually grew up in the Chicagoland area.
Yeah. I take that responsibility to heart, bro. It's you know, coming out of Harvey, it's a big deal, you know, to get that kind of good press out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, when I first met you, I got to tell you, you're just funny as hell, and you do all this dramatic stuff, but you also did a lot of stand-up in college, but you keep your hand in comedy.
Yeah. I keep my hand in comedy. I've been doing a lot more stand-up lately at the Kamahachi Grill in Old Town. I've been doing shows at least once a month. I had a residency at Laugh Factory for a while, hosting up there.
That's cool.
So, yeah, I've been trying to stay as busy as possible.
You got to keep it going, right?
Yeah,
you got to maintain it a little bit. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, you talked to me about this before. You said how, you know, you feel great playing a police officer on the show. But, you know, because they treat people with respect on the show. But you grew up in Harvey, and you felt at the time that they didn't have the best reputation.
No. And, you know, I think, you know, they're definitely doing their best, especially right now. You know, just, you know, it's a tough job. to be a cop. I've been a cop for, I guess, about three seasons now, mm-hmm. and going into the fourth, even more and more, I'm learning how difficult this task could be. Just, you know, how tough you have to be, how strong you have to be, and fearless you have to be to do this job and to do it well. So I commend those officers that are out there that hold the badge, you know, with that kind of respect and integrity.
Absolutely. Now, you again said last four seasons you play a police officer on television. How did the role come about originally?
Well, you know, it originated on Chicago Fire.
Fire, right.
And so
yeah.
Actually my character, John Sadas and Jason Begay's character, we are the only three original cast members that are, you know, that came from that first fold over there in Chicago Fire. And you know, it's one of those characters that I think you know, I auditioned for Chicago Fire first. And then I didn't get the role, the initial role of Otis on Chicago Fire.
Yeah.
It was a black character initially. And so when NBC decided to change the color of that character, I think they kept me in mind for Chicago PD.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very cool. Now, you've been back on the set since midsummer. I know people are waiting for the show. It's like a few weeks away already, but you've been back at work. You had some nice time off, but it must be great to get to back together with the whole cast and start shooting again, right?
Yeah, absolutely, bro. We're about four episodes in now. Working on the fifth.
Okay.
On September 21st, we'll be dropping the premiere. And I think everybody's going to be excited about this season.
Absolutely, absolutely. Legendary Dick Wolf produces all these shows, and mm-hmm. one of his rules is that the actors live in the city that they work in. And I think that's important, because he established that right from the beginning, that he wants you living here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. I think that helps capture the city in which you work in and be with the people that you're working with and understand the city a little bit better.
Yeah. Dick could be the first person to tell you that Chicago is the biggest character of the show. You
know, it is, in all these shows.
In all of these shows. Yeah. And so, you know, to stay true to Chicago and what this city means, to be able to shoot in the city definitely helps the TV show out. The camera loves Chicago. It's, you know, it's just a beautiful place to shoot.
It is.
And it's home for me, so I love it.
It is home, exactly. You've got a great group of consultants on set, former and current Chicago police officers that you get to work with regularly, which is pretty cool as well, because it keeps you connected.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. I mean, we learn so much from all the tech advisors, all the consultants. I think that the camaraderie that cops have also kind of, excuse me, brings us together too as a cast.
But they do that as far as the script is concerned, you know, when they're consulting on the script. But then when as an actor on the set, you're also doing the exact same thing. I mean, they're actually mm-hmm. helping you through some of those situations and directing some of that as well.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Now, I heard that there'll be a history-making four-show crossover sometime as the season progresses, because you got four shows based here. That's crazy.
Yeah. I don't know how they're going to do it.
Yeah.
I know that everybody behind the scenes and the crew and whoever has to come up with these schedules, I know they already have anxiety. Like,
I mean,
I'm looking forward to it, but it's easy as an actor to just, you know, just show up and just, you know, hit my mark and say the words. But everybody else who has to get everybody's schedules lined up and together, man, is that's hard to do.
But, you know, this has always been a great mecca for production, television and movie production. Mm-hmm. But I think Fire and PD really kicked off something for television, because there is 10 shows being filmed in Chicago as we speak right now.
Yeah. Chicago's pretty busy.
And you might as well do that. I mean, you do have all the crews and everybody out here, so you might as well capitalize on that keep that growing as well. The season finale in May left us with Voight being offered a promotion, but also consumed with revenge after his son was brutally assaulted. A few cliffhangers that we're going to have to deal with in the next few weeks, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's going to be exciting. All right, it's Dave Plyer and for Steve Cochran on 720 WGN, and we're talking to LaRoyce Hawkins, one of the stars of NBC Chicago PD and the upcoming season premiere and upcoming fundraiser and awareness campaign to end gun violence. Royce, you talked to me before about being a kid in Harvey, Illinois, where you grew up. Wasn't always the safest on the streets. Mm-hmm. More than 400 people were shot in Chicago in August, most violent month in 20 years. Nearly 500 homicides, over 2,800 people shot in 2016, close to what the statistics were for all of 2015, just as of this month. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, man, it's hard to hear. You know, it's being from here and, you know, trying to represent not just a character, but a culture that wants to counter all of this violence and wants to, you know, just you. I apologize, Dave. I had a, what makes the fundraiser for this weekend important and powerful is that Patrick has to live on. You understand?
Yeah, it's and called so, Patrick Lives On to End Gun Violence. It's this coming Saturday at the Chop Shop Restaurant. Right. It's 2033 West North Avenue. Patrick Boswell was tragically, he lost his life to gun violence in Rosemont in January 2015. He was a 14-year-old boy walking in the wrong place at the wrong time in a neighboring town and was caught in the middle of gang crossfire. Patrick was not in a gang. And he was just caught in the middle of all this, and and the event will take place on what would have been Patrick's 16th birthday.
Yeah, he was going to be 16. Patrick's story is reflective of a lot of stories. A couple years ago, I lost a cousin, a little cousin, gun violence. He was on his way to high school and never got to play basketball for the team he was supposed to play for. He never got to. I'm sorry, bro. As I think about it, you know, I struggle with it. And so when I was asked to help Patricia, who is the script supervisor for our show, when
this
I was
your
asked,
son.
I was asked to help, and I was a pallbearer at Patrick's funeral, and you know, we're like a family on this show, and for everybody to bring their gifts together and lend them to Patricia. Not just for Patricia and Patrick, but for everybody who's who struggled with something like this,
To losing a child,
to losing a kid like this. It's so it's an important weekend, and I apologize for getting a little choked up about it.
No,
this morning,
not at all. I know. I totally understand.
It's heavy.
Mission of this organization is to create nationally viewed public service announcements on the epidemic that is gun violence. It can directly, as you said, it can affect anyone at any time.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what neighborhood you call home.
Yeah.
So this isn't a south side. This isn't a west side. This isn't a north side. It's really anywhere. And it's anywhere in the United States.
Yeah, it's anywhere. We lost my little cousin Mario right there in Harvey. But Patricia is not from a neighborhood like that. You know what I'm saying? So to be like in the De La Salle area, it just goes to show you that the range of how serious these gangs and gun conditions are, it's mind-boggling.
The one thing that I can agree with 1,000%, I believe people have the right to own a gun, but there has to be strict gun laws, and people have to be put away and put away for a long time when they violate those laws. And I think that's the biggest issue, is we've got too many people that are back out in the street. You know, within weeks or within months of absolutely, you know, of holding a gun or shooting somebody, they're back on the streets, and that's the problem.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But what we're going to do our best this weekend to, you know, not just to bring awareness to those situations, but to also celebrate life, celebrate the lives that we've lost, inspire people to continue to not just motivate themselves, but also motivate their communities. You know, and helping us move past these times.
Well, gun violence knows no race, no class, no neighborhood. The organization that is being built as Patrick Lives On strives to encourage children to engage in positive activities after school and on summer and winter breaks. If children are kept occupied in a positive way, there will be less opportunity for them to join gangs and become involved with gun violence as well. Now, you're hosting this event with many of your fellow actors from Chicago PD. Tell us about what's going to happen this night.
Yeah, so everybody's going to get a chance to come and see us actors do other things, you know. Like we talked about my comedy earlier today, but there are other people in the cast of Chicago Med, PD, and Fire who are musicians, poets. They're great writers. They love to speak. And so we're putting a show together. It's going to be something like a variety show. I'm going to be the host for that evening.
That's cool.
Yeah. And everybody's going to get up and, you know, just show a different side of themselves on that day.
Fundraising event will be held Saturday, September 10th. Again, doors open at 8 p.m. and the performances begin at 9:30. Appetizers, beverages from local restaurants are included. There will be a silent auction with guest auctioneers as well as a raffle with many great prizes. Ticket prices are $100 per person, with VIP tickets at $200. VIP ticket holders will have the opportunity to meet and have their photos taken with the actors. Tickets can only be purchased online by visiting the organization's website under the tab Events at patricklivson.org. And if you can't attend the event, you can make a donation as well. And again, it's patricklivson.org. And it's very cool that you're involved with this.
Yeah, man. It's definitely it's going to be a good time.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, when we talk about gun violence, it's easy to kind of, you know, get to a somber place. But I want people to understand that we're going to be excited that day. Like I said, we're going to celebrate life. We're going to have a great time. We're going to enjoy each other. And, yeah, it's going to be an exhilarating event.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, your sister Linaya is here as well, your younger sister.
Yeah.
Now, you got to be pretty proud of your brother. I mean, it's got to be kind of surreal. I heard you and your family went out last night and hung out, which is very mm-hmm. cool. You got to be pretty proud of him.
You think I'm not when I am? I love it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And you've been touring around this morning. You were on You and Me this morning as well, right?
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Very cool. Again, for tickets, visit patricklivson.org. And a programming note, the season premiere of Chicago PD airs Wednesday, September 21st at 9 Central on NBC. LaRoyce, always a pleasure. Glad you came down. Go get some sleep, my friend.
Thank you so much, Dave. Enjoy the rest of your labor.
All right. Dave Plyer in for Steve Cochran on this Labor Day Monday morning, and this hour is sponsored by Wintrust. So Labor Day is the third biggest grilling day of the summer season. The last day of summer is over 3 weeks away on September 21st, but it's also not the end of the grilling season. You can grill all year round, and this month also begins tailgating season. And a tradition here on WGN for the last 4 years, joining us as he has all summer long, is Kevin Coleman, and that is Weber's Grillmaster. Good morning, Kev.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Before we jump into the tailgating, which I want to talk about a little bit, you brought in some amazing food here. You've got a brisket that you've been working on all morning, at the wee hours of the morning. Tell me what you brought and your recipe.
So we decided to bring in some food for you guys, because you are family now since we do this every grilling holiday. And like I said, when I walked in, the best thing I can do to show people how much I care is cook them some good food.
That's very nice. I think that's true. All right.
So we got brisket. I'm a traditional Texas guy, so I used post oak as my wood. Along with charcoal, I used a Malabar black pepper, which there's two different grinds that are on there.
And this is on a smoker that you did?
It's on our 22.5-inch smoker.
Okay.
So. A little bit bigger, I can fit the whole packer-sized brisket on there, and then just let it go. And 18 hours later, we have some pretty good results, I think.
So it's literally not a lot of seasoning, not a lot of anything?
Actually, it's a ton of seasoning.
So tell me what you're putting in there.
So just salt and pepper, that's it.
Really?
Traditionally on a brisket, if you're in Texas, and I just got back from Austin on Friday, that's all you're going to put on there. Now, the shoulder that we have on there, there's like a 17 different spice rub that I have that I put on there that does a pretty good job.
Is that your own kind of little concoction of sorts?
It is a concoction.
Okay, all right. And the barbecue sauce, what do you prefer to use for barbecue sauce?
I'm more of a tomato-based guy.
Okay.
So, and then people always ask, like, what's your go-to barbecue sauce? And I actually, although I do work for Weber, I do like Weber's original barbecue sauce because it's a good, nice, and neutral sauce, so it doesn't overpower things. Mm-hmm. But I'll actually doctor that up with a cup of apple juice. I'll do a little bit of honey, do a little bit of cayenne pepper, and I'll thin it out a little bit. And then it's a beautiful wash for things.
Nice. Very nice. Very nice. Well, it is tailgating season. I mean, we're talking football all over the city and on college campuses all across America. So you've got, I'm going to talk first about the Weber Q Grill, because we're going to be giving away a Chicago Cubs Weber Q Grill after the break. But tell me a little bit about the grill itself.
So we're giving away a Q1200, and the really cool thing now is Weber just partnered with six universities. So we have a college Q.
I saw that.
Which is really cool. So it comes, we just got back from Texas doing some stuff there. There's Auburn, there's Wisconsin, there's Nebraska, we have Michigan. So there's some really cool things going on with that, and it's the ultimate way to show your affection for your favorite collegiate team.
And you can vote for what the next college team is going to be at Weber.com.
And that should be an easy thing for people in Chicago, because they vote early and they vote often.
Yes,
so
that's true. That's very true. And then if you don't have your team, there's great colors to represent your favorite team as well. So there's a Northwestern purple, there's an orange for the Bears, I mean, for the Illini, whatever it might be. But you've got a bunch of colors too.
Yeah, there's some great colors which really appeal to so many different people. Now you can truly kind of make your own grill. And with the porcelain enamel cast iron grate that thing has, no matter if you're in Chicago tailgating down at Soldier Field, which we will be for the Bears-Packers game this year, or you're somewhere else, it retains heat so well. So no matter what temperatures you're cooking in, that grill is so unbelievably powerful that you'll be able to get everything done.
And if you got a question for Kevin about grilling or about your Weber grill, 312-981-7200. So tailgating, what's the most important tip for tailgating? And I know what you're going to say.
What am I going to say?
Prepare in advance.
Well, that is one, prepare in advance.
Yeah.
So one year we were coming downtown, and usually we throw a tailgate for about 100, 125 people down on the Waldron deck for the Bears. One year we're driving down, underneath the old post office building on Congress. I think I forgot a tank. Didn't have the fuel. So always remember your... So now it's like a badge of honor.
Important. Yeah.
Always have your fuel. And then also, I like to do as much prep as I can before I'm going down there. So, and remember when you're
It moves fast. I mean, you have to do that. Yeah.
It moves fast, especially I've been known to have an endless meat cooler when we go on tailgate. So you got to make sure you're delivering for the people. And I like to do my... If I'm going to be doing dinner goes in first. Lunch would go in second. Breakfast would go in third, which means it's going in on a first in, last out. Because that way, when I'm cooking, I don't have to go through the cooler. It's all partitioned out to where, okay, next course, boom, next course, boom.
Gotcha.
So the
makes
preparation,
sense.
The more I can do at home, the less I can do at the tailgate, and it makes it much easier. And we have this iGrill that we're talking about today. We're going to be giving one of those away, but that's another way to have an easier time tailgating, because instead of having to worry about your food cooking, you can just put it in, it Bluetooths to your phone. It tells you when it's done, and everybody's having more fun.
Now, people don't think about breakfast on the grill, but that's what you start with when you're tailgating.
Absolutely. So we do a breakfast sandwich, which is usually consistent of peppers, eggs. You use a griddle, get a little bit of bacon on there, get a little bit of brisket, depending on if we're bringing that down there. And then you can start building your menus from there. And I'm a big fan of, I want to eat all day. I want to have fun all day. And so tailgating is definitely one of those opportunities that you can do that.
You also recommend a burger bar.
I always go with a burger bar because the first year we came down, just like everybody else, you're sitting on 290 or sitting on 90 in traffic. So we take the whole tailgate back out. We make a burger bar. Everybody can kind of choose what they want to put on it. We have every ingredient you could probably think of. Have some fun. Normally the Bears win, so it's always a good thing. And everybody, you know, you're not sitting in traffic, and it really ends the day the right way.
And then you've also got a recipe for mac and cheese on the grill. Again, something a little out of the ordinary.
Mac, anything I can do outside of on my grills, I'm happy about. So mac and cheese is one of our favorites.
Yeah.
And one thing that I really love putting in there and on top is a little bit of bacon. So we'll saute the bacon. I'll add a little bit of the bacon grease or flavor to the mac and cheese, and I'll top it off with a little bit of breadcrumb and bacon, and it is outstanding.
And then you got accessories, too, for the grill. You know, you talked about the griddle. You've got veggie baskets that you can use as well. I mean, there's just all kinds of things that help that grilling process along. And, you know, when you're tailgating, you're obviously doing it on a gas grill. But people do charcoal grill as well.
Charcoal grilling, you go to any of the lots, people are going to be doing that. And if you're going to be doing charcoal grilling, you're going to, A, need some time. You're going to need a chimney starter. You're going to need our fire our wax cubes, which they call lighter cubes, and that gets your charcoal started extremely quickly. So on days like today, it's perfect to tailgate with charcoal. When it gets a little bit worse outside, you really got to start stepping up that game.
Yeah, I was looking at average grill owners spend $125 for food and drinks at a tailgating party. Let's see, 57% reveal they've attended a game in the last 12 months, and the number jumped like 15% from last year. And I was looking at the Bleacher Report of the Big Ten teams that are best for tailgating, and no one in Illinois made it this year, so we got to make a difference for next year.
We need to partner with somebody and get that done.
I think so.
We've been to my
Wisconsin's in there, but in Ohio and stuff, but for some reason, no Illinois this year.
Champaign is usually a pretty big
place
for tailgating.
So.
It's huge.
It was ranked the top party school, but not the top grilling school, so we got to make that happen.
We got to make that happen.
All right, so we're going to give away what again? It's a Chicago Cubs Weber Q Grill.
Yes,
we're giving it's blue logoed, very cool, and you can actually see it at Wrigley Field.
You can see it at Wrigley Field, and with the Cubs doing as well as they are, and hopefully, I'm not going to say it and put a jinx on, but yes, we're very excited to be celebrating the Cubs. They're doing fantastic. This grill is a perfect compliment, and come October time when you want to tailgate, this is going to be a perfect time to do that.
And the grill is also available to purchase, but you can only do that at Weber.com.
Weber.com. So just like with our collegiate schools, that's the place to go to when you're going to need to buy that Q1200.
All right, so here's the question. We'll start with the ninth caller, and here's the question. Where do people grill the most in the U.S.? Is it north, south, east, or west? So where do people grill the most in the U.S.? You got to get the answer right. We have one grill to give away, north, south, east, or west. And it's Dave Plyer back with you on 720 WGN, filling in for Mr. Steve Cochran, who's back tomorrow morning, starting at 6. I'm talking to Weber Grills Master Chef Kevin Coleman about Labor Day grilling and the kickoff to tailgating season. And our question was, where to win a Weber Grill, a Chicago Cubs Weber Q Grill, where do people grill the most in the U.S.? Is it north? Is it south? Is it east and or west? Valerie, welcome to WGN.
Thank you. It's got to be North.
It is North, Valerie. Congratulations. You win a Weber Q Chicago Cubs grill.
That is excellent.
Absolutely. Congratulations to you. And hang on the line. We'll have Bennett get your information. All right?
Thank you.
Okay. People as North and Northeast are the heaviest barbecuers in the nation, followed by the South and then the Western U.S. You would think the South would be bigger, but it is the North, right?
I would think that the South would be because Memphis and you have the Carolinas, which it would make sense that they were ahead, but you know what? Grilling was invented here by George Stevens, so I could see why the North is right. The most.
Exactly, exactly. Vince, you're on 720 WGN. You got a question for Kevin.
Yeah, I have an old platinum grill. Where can I get the parts for it?
Is it an old platinum charcoal grill or an old platinum gas?
Gas grill.
Gas. What I would probably do is either go on Weber.com to order the parts because you can get the schematics, or I would try an Ace Hardware just because they have a tendency to carry all the parts, accessories, and have a pretty knowledgeable staff that can either get them for you or they'll probably stock them in their stores.
The Ace doesn't have it. Are the parts still available for it? That grill's probably 17 years old.
Yeah, the parts are still available, and you can always call our customer service at 800-446-1071, and they'd be able to get them out to you.
So go to Weber.com, and they've got a parts line that you can call, Vince.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks, buddy. Happy Labor Day to you.
Thank you.
All right, so grilling this season. You've got some other great recipes I want to talk about. You brought in a brisket and some other things. Talk about your grilled beef tenderloin. That's one of my favorites.
So my grilled beef tenderloin, we do a couple of different things depending on what time of year it is. Now what we'll do is I like to keep it a little bit lighter, so I'll go a little bit less pepper on there, a little bit more garlic. I'll take it slowly, bring it up. I'll smoke it at like 225 to 250, and then I'll turn the heat up and then finish it over a hot grill, get the nice searing to it. And then the nice thing, you let it rest. I take a little bit of butter, drizzle it over the top, which gives a little bit of richness. Mm-hmm. And this is actually a good segue because with beef tenderloin, 125 in the center is probably perfect. So nice. Using a meat thermometer to ensure that things are coming off at the right temperature is critical when you're grilling.
Let's talk about some vegetables on the grill. What's the easiest way and the best way to do some asparagus?
The easiest and best way, heat about 450 degrees. I actually like putting a little bit of salt and pepper. I put a little balsamic on there as a marinade.
Balsamic, okay.
Yep, to give it a little bit of tang. And it's about 2 minutes per side, and it should be done.
And that's it.
And that's it.
And that's it. It's still corn season, so what about some sweet summer corn? What are your favorite recipes on the grill?
For corn, we were just talking about that. I like soaking it for about an hour, use a little bit of sugar inside of there and ice cold water, take it out and grill it. And with the corn that I have left over, if it's not all eaten, I'll actually make a salad out of that and I'll cut it off of the cob and add that back in because you get a beautiful caramelization to it and a nice sweetness, which is great. So a little bit of avocado, onion, garlic. Mix that all up together with a little bit of tomato, put the corn in there, and it's perfect.
But you let the corn sit in some cold water with sugar.
I do.
Okay, just to sweeten it up.
To sweeten it up a little bit, yep. And it also helps because if you cook in the husk, which is what I do normally, the husk doesn't dry out when it's on the grill. And then if that happens, you can have a little bit of an issue when you're grilling it. So it does add some moisture back in.
All right, dessert. My wife bought some peaches, which are in season. She wants to throw them on the grill. What are some great recipes for something like that?
The peaches are awesome, so I would have them.
Yeah.
And then what I would do is drizzle a little bit of brown sugar over the top of them, possibly a little bit of honey, put them right on the grill and call it a day.
That's it. Brown sugar and some honey. Nice. And again, we're getting into fall, so you've got a brown bag apple pie that you do on the grill. Tell me about that.
You go all over the world teaching people barbecue and learning all these new techniques, and the apple pie is one of the funnest things I can do, especially around Thanksgiving time. And people don't think about it is the brown bag. The brown bag helps keep everything moist and perfect inside there. So I'll take my apple pies, get it in a brown bag, put it indirect on a grill. That's critical. Indirect on a grill, bake it for about 45 minutes, and you are going to be in heaven.
That sounds fabulous. That sounds fabulous. And of course, we want to encourage people not only to tailgate, but to grill all season long, because sometimes people close down their grills once it starts getting cold outside. And I will tell you, the first thing we do when we're raking leaves, shoveling snow, is we get that path going to our grill, because that's critical. And it makes you think of summer a little bit, because you got some really great stuff that you can throw on there.
Well, and now you have a big push for Thanksgiving and the holidays coming up, and that's a big, busy time for us. And there's nothing better than a nice smoked turkey on your grill. And last year, we actually learned this new technique called equilibrium brining. So people that are out there that normally do a 24-hour brine, equilibrium brining actually is a 4-day process, and it allows the ample amount of salt to water into your meat, and it is the absolute best, most moist turkey you're ever going to have. So check out equilibrium brining.
All right. And a lot of this stuff can be found on your blog, too, at Weber.com. Now, you've got something else you want to give away. It's something really cool that you guys put out this year.
Yeah, it's really cool. We have this Bluetooth device called iGrill. And it takes, any novice can turn into a grill master overnight. So what happens is you put your thermometer, you put your probe inside your meat, it sends a Bluetooth signal to your phone and tells that's you when
amazing.
It's done.
That is amazing.
So it's pretty much almost idiot-proof when it comes to barbecuing. And that's what we love, because that's one of the hard things that people have with grilling. They don't know when food is done. They don't know how long it's supposed to cook. So this device takes care of all of that for you, and it makes it pretty simple, which is what we want. More people grilling.
And sends it right to your phone. And it's, again, it's the
iGrill 2.
iGrill 2. And we'll give that away to the 10th caller. You don't have to answer any questions. 10th caller, 312-981-7200 for this new Bluetooth device that you'll really love as well. Kevin Coleman, Weber Grill, always a pleasure all summer long. Hopefully we can continue this to the end of the year.
Hopefully we can. Thank you for having us. And like we said, if you need any more tips and tricks, go to Weber.com, go to Weber Nation, and we're here to help you.
Thanks, Kev. Appreciate it.
Thank you.